program you have just enjoyed is a previously recorded broadcast.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor.
We always hold out hope, but the chances are diminishing as each hour passes.
Mining expert Devitt McAteer talking about six Utah miners missing for a week and a half now. And now, in the wake of the deaths of three rescue miners, the underground rescue mission halted.
This is Steve Futterman in Huntington, Utah. While the underground rescue efforts have now stopped, officials continue efforts above ground, drilling holes into areas where the miners might be. So far, three holes have been drilled into the mine chambers with no sign of the trapped men.
What a wild ride on Wall Street this week, finishing up with a furious rally today. CBS News business correspondent Anthony Mason.
Most August Fridays, the trading floor is empty. They're all gone for long weekends. Instead, we've had like record volume. You've seen a whirlwind of trading because people are worried about their money. And there's a sigh of relief today. But underneath it all, people are still worried.
233-point gain of the Dow today. We're back above 13,000. Dean is deadly. Three killed in the Eastern Caribbean by the first hurricane of the season.
Dean is a Category 3 hurricane, a major hurricane, and with maximum sustained winds of 125 miles per hour.
Hurricane expert Michelle Manelli says Dean is expected to get stronger, reaching Category 4 status as it heads toward Jamaica, where Tourism Minister Basil Smith says people are getting ready.
Batten down windows, making sure water supplies are adequate should supplies be interrupted.
Two fatal military crashes. The Navy stopping its search today for three people aboard a twin-engine radar plane crashing off North Carolina's coast. The aviators declared dead. In Arizona, three Marines and a sailor killed in the crash of a military helicopter. Dozens of aftershocks in Peru, including at least five today, following the magnitude 8 earthquake that killed more than 500 people. Reporter Lucy Conger says hundreds of injured waiting on cots outside hospitals for fear the aftershocks will collapse the buildings.
The injured have overloaded the hospitals in the principal cities that suffered the most damage, and some injured have been evacuated by helicopter to Lima, where the hospitals have more capacity.
Yeah, it's one thing to kid around about expecting pattern baldness to turn up in the next generation. It is quite another if you're talking about disease. CBS's Barry Bagnato.
Parents with genetically linked diseases often tell their kids they too might be at risk. Researcher Dr. Angela Bradbury says in most cases a doctor or counselor is not consulted. In a Journal of Clinical Oncology study, when mothers with a breast cancer-related gene flaw told a child there was a negative emotional response about half the time, shock, anxiety.
It makes sense to think about how to best use genetic information so that we're not causing any harm.
Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
Recap of the markets. The Dow up 233 to finish at 13,079. The NASDAQ ends up 54. The S&P gains 34. This is CBS News.
Pump four is on. Go ahead and fill.
Don't get conservative on your summer travel plans because of high gas prices. Just get a Garmin and make every trip more efficient. Garmin's portable navigators put a world of maps and travel info at your fingertips. Tap the screen to look up restaurants, hotels, and attractions, and get voice-prompted directions.
Turn right on Broadway.
Some Garmin navigators even list gas prices and can route you to the station with the cheapest fill-up. Garmin, don't just get there. Arrive.
Sears Book Chapter 9, Tires and Dads. It all began when Jill got her license. Her father looked at the family car's ball tires and panicked. He went straight to Sears Auto Center and bought four Goodyear tires at the lowest prices guaranteed. So when Jill safely rolls in at $9.59, he's glad he chose the best. This life chapter and the lowest prices on Goodyear tires can be found in the Sears Book. For a limited time, get a $20 or $40 Visa cash card with purchase of four select Goodyear tires. Sears, where it begins.
Rebate offer ends 8/25/07. Exclusions apply. See store for details on offer and the Sears Price Match Plus policy.
You ever want to bet on a sure thing? Let's go now to Ramblin' Gamblin' Sam Litzinger.
This is one of those "why doesn't this kind of thing ever happen to me" stories. At the Twin River Casino in Providence, Rhode Island, gamblers using a particular video lottery terminal were winning twice as much money as they should have. There was something wrong with the machine, and it erroneously paid out more than $450,000 in 2 months. The machine's manufacturer says it's reimbursing the state for the lost revenue and is looking to see if it can get any of the mistaken payouts back. Gamblers, don't bother rushing to Twin River. The faulty machine's been removed. Sam Litzinger, CBS News.
Hey, how big does Whole Foods need to get? That's what the feds are asking, appealing a court ruling that allows Whole Foods Markets to purchase its rival, organic grocer, Wild Oats Markets. The Federal Trade Commission seeking to block the $565 million deal, arguing it would stifle competition and lead to higher prices in the premium organic food market. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Pump four is on. Go ahead and fill.
Don't get conservative on your summer travel plans because of high gas prices. Just get a Garmin and make every trip more efficient. Garmin's portable navigators put a world of maps and travel info at your fingertips. Tap the screen to look up restaurants, hotels, and attractions, and get voice-prompted directions.
Turn right on Broadway.
Some Garmin navigators even list gas prices and can route you to the station with the cheapest fill-up. Garmin, don't just get there. Arrive.
Introducing the new Subway Scrabble game, where you have a 1 in 2 chance to instantly win delicious food. Or collect letters and play online for a chance to win one of 10 $100,000 cash grand prizes. That's 10 $100,000 cash prizes, trips to beaches, family resorts, and much more. New Subway Scrabble. Play often, win often. Stop by today.
No purchase necessary. Open to U.S. legal residents 13 years or older. See store for official rules. Void where prohibited. Subway is a registered trademark of Doctors Associates, Inc. Scrabble is a trademark of Hasbro in the U.S. and Canada.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
One, two, three.
Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your humble host, Peter B.
Never fight them. Those who fight wars, I never like them. Those who write laws, they can recite them. And those of us who just fight laws, we live and die them. But I know they're never gonna tell you why. No, they only wanna tell you lies. Why? No, they only wanna tell you lies. No, never ever gonna tell you why. No, they only wanna tell you lies. It's time to go home. To take our boys away now. To take our girls away now. To take our boys away.
Yep, it's time to bring them home. Well past time, in my opinion. Welcome to today's edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. We've got a lot to talk about, and I'm glad you have found this program. We're live on the air up and down the left coast. Next week, we expand inland, picking up a new affiliate in Laurel, Montana, and I'm excited about that. And today, well, we've got some interesting guests on the program. Chris Hayes, who writes for The Nation, is going to join us in about a half an hour. Have you heard about the NAFTA superhighway? Well, it is largely an urban and rural legend, or myth. And Chris has written a powerful article that stitches together the various pieces of the story that have led many people to conclude that there is a dastardly scheme to build a superhighway basically from the Texas border all the way up through the heartland to the Canadian border. Parts of the story are true, but the overarching idea that there is this massive highway being built is actually untrue. So we're going to sort fact from fiction with him coming up a little bit later this hour. Next hour, Kevin Danaher, a very inspiring man, co-founder of Global Exchange. His wife is Medea Benjamin, who co-founded Global Exchange with him and has gone on to other efforts as well, including Code Pink. Kevin's going to join us to talk about a new book he co-authored called Building the Green Economy. And there's some inspiring stories from people who have taken on big business, taken on corporate America and multinational corporations in the interests of humans, and won. And he also has a blueprint that goes beyond the ordinary, you know, solar power hybrids and that kind of thing. So we'll look forward to talking with him. Also in our green coverage next hour, Jeremiah Bauman from Environment Oregon will be joining us. And they've got some very interesting things going on there, some legislation that we want to alert you to, particularly our listeners in the Portland and Coos Bay areas. So stay tuned for that coming up. And also on the program today, per usual, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com will join us. And there's some interesting news about the Diebold Corporation. Diebold wants to sell off, or at least disguise, its participation in electronic voting systems. And he'll break that story and give us a whole lot more about election protection coming up as usual in our third and final hour today. And I have good news. Yesterday we had some glitches in our phone switches and it hampered our ability to take your phone calls. And I got out my Black & Decker toolkit and fixed it last night. So I want you to know that you're welcome to call at any time to join this conversation toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372 is our toll-free number. And Too Tall Brian is taking your calls today, so be nice to him. 888-573-8372. And Brian is feverishly dialing to try to track down our scheduled guest for this time. David Enders is a 24-year-old freelance journalist and co-founder of the Baghdad Bulletin, the first post-invasion attempt to set up an English-language news outlet in Iraq. And he traveled there and returned just a couple of days ago. And we're having trouble getting a hold of David, and I think he may be jet-lagged or maybe otherwise engaged. So perhaps he'll join us this half hour, but I don't have any confirmation of that right now. So I want to launch into some topics about Iraq, and you're welcome to call and share your comments. Again, my number is 888-5-PETER-B. This story broke a couple of hours ago. General Ray Odierno, he's an Army Lieutenant General, who is the number two American commander in Iraq, said today that coalition forces are planning quick strike raids aimed at smashing al-Qaeda and other insurgents in far-flung parts of the country before the U.S. brings some of its surge troops home. If we can, we want to finish them off, he said of al-Qaeda. I want you to listen carefully to this story as I read it to you. This is from the Associated Press. And what we're hearing here is a general performing a public relations function. Speaking to Pentagon reporters by videocon from Baghdad, he said commanders are planning in April to start withdrawing troops that were sent in as part of the surge and complete the drawdown to pre-escalation levels by August of 2008. So a year from now, we'll be back to where we were a year ago. That's not progress, in my view. And, of course, it paints the surge as something that actually is effective. Military operations launched since the escalation have helped coalition forces capture and kill insurgent leaders, disrupt their operations, retake some territory and main population centers, according to Odierno. He asserted the coalition forces now have a chance to really go after them and defeat them. Officials believe extremists are trying to regroup in northern Iraq, where American troop presence is much lighter, and we've seen the evidence. As many as 500 people were killed in two northern Iraqi villages by devastating truck bombs just a couple of days ago. The military has calmed areas of the country, then moved on to other places, only to find insurgents return to the just calmed area. Duh! Commanders have said the extra troops from the buildup are helping them fight that problem now. Now, absent from this story is any reference to the Iraqi Defense Forces or police forces. You remember, as soon as they stand up, we're going to stand down? You remember that our primary function was to train Iraqi troops? We don't talk about that anymore. When was the last time you heard a success story, even from the right wing at Newsmax or one of those crazy websites, telling us that Iraqi troops were on the front lines of an incident and performed up to standard? I hear a stunning silence in response to that question. This AP story goes on. It's also not a new development that as coalition forces fight a problem in one area, militants rise up in another. The general did not answer the question of whether he has enough troops to go after regrouping insurgents in isolated locations. Quote, due to the constant pressure and depletion of their leadership, extremists have been pushed out of many population centers and are on the move, seeking other places to operate within the country.
As a result, we're now in pursuit of Al-Qaeda and other extremist elements and will continue to aggressively target their shrinking areas of influence. Now, this is where Odierno is becoming a Bush mouthpiece, because he is lumping together Al-Qaeda and various other insurgent groups, including Sunnis, and then talks about them all as terrorists and acts as if the U.S. can win this situation simply by snuffing out Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Now, here's a critical quote. He said there's been a shift in calculations on who is causing the violence. The military estimates that in July, 52% of the violence across Iraq was caused by, get this, Al-Qaeda and Sunni insurgents. Now, those are very different groups. Very different. But they're lumped together for the purposes of this misleading statistic. And this echoes the president's misarticulation that our real problem in Iraq is Al-Qaeda. Now, we know that there are some Al-Qaeda forces there. I'm not denying that. And certainly the U.S. should address that problem. But this is another attempt to mislead the American people into thinking that Iraq is the central front in the war on terror, and that if we don't fight them there, we'll have to fight them over here. These are loads of hot, steaming crap. Excuse my expression, but that's what they are. And so if this is what Odierno is doing here in mid-August, we have about a month to go before the White House gives a script to General David Petraeus and sends him up to the Hill to read it. And I just bet that we're going to get more of the same. More of the same BS, more of the same misleading information. And, of course, more lame attempts by the Democrats to triangulate the issue, make progressives like you and me think that they're actually doing something about it, while they repeatedly cave into the Bush administration and are either, you know, bulldozed or, you know, somehow bullied or buffaloed into supporting last year's Military Commissions Act, which has not been fixed, despite promises from people like Arlen Specter and Patrick Leahy, and the recent passage of what I call the NSA amnesty bill, which has legalized the intentional, ongoing law-breaking of the Bush administration by, you know, in its spying on Americans in the name of protecting us from, once again, Al-Qaeda. I'd like to hear your comments, and I've got the next segment to take your phone calls, and the phones are working, so let's put it all together. Give me a call and tell me what's on your mind. 888-5-PETER-B is the toll-free number. 888-573-8372. We'll continue in a moment, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
It's fair
time again, and this year we're homegrown at the Monterey County Fair. We're talking 6 big days of family-packed entertainment from Tuesday, August 14th through Sunday, August 19th. Stop by every day for free headline entertainment, including the Paul Thorne Band, War, Pam Tillis, Night Ranger, plus our homegrown band showcase featuring top local bands. Your entire family will love the free exhibits, including the Busy Bee Dogs and Hugo the One Man Band. You will love the Beer and Wine Pavilion featuring homegrown beers and wines, all this and much, much more, just for $8 if you're an adult. Admission for 6 to 12-year-olds is only $4, and kids under 6 get in for free. Kids' Day is Tuesday, Seniors' Day is Wednesday, and Military Appreciation Day is Thursday. From August 14th through August 19th, the fun will be at the 2007 Monterey Fair. Don't miss it. For information and to buy tickets, go online at www.montereycountyfair.com or call the fair office at 831-372-1000. That's 831-372-1000 for the homegrown Monterey County Fair.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Impeachment with honor. Transitional marijuana. Every cell phone calls back. They be watching your ass. Impeachment with honor. What say our forefathers? If they were around, this White House would crash on down.
Now we got a new impeachment song here.
A disgraceful Bush administration. Cheney seems to want world domination. Yeah, the president's a fake. Halliburton's on the take. Folks are wondering who's running our nation. Well, I used to have faith in our system till the president started dismantling constitutional rights to increase their own might. And he spared no one who was against them. Impeachment with honor. Traditional marijuana. Make yourself wrong. They be watching your ass. Impeachment with honor. What say our forefathers? They were around. This White House would crash on down.
That's hot off the CD burner in El Cajon, California. That's near San Diego. Lee Cook and a band called Joe Grease and the Dump W Band. A new song called Impeachment with Honor. Not bad. And we'll just add that to our musical archives, put it into rotation with some of the other tunes that we enjoy here, and well, just let me know if you like it or don't. 888-5 Peter B, if you'd like to comment here. Our guest was unable to join us, David Enders, fresh back from Iraq. We'll reschedule him for next week. And I was slamming the Democrats before the break, And I won't retract what I said, but it's fair to say that Harry Reid has been sputtering a bit. According to truthout.org and a report just in from a French press agency, Agence France-Presse, Harry Reid has accused the White House of launching an attempt to mask candid testimony when Ambassador Ryan Crocker to Baghdad and General David Petraeus testify next month. Reid says, if the president's going to continue to ask American soldiers to fight in this civil war, then those closest to the situation on the ground must give Congress and the American people a frank and honest account of the war, of this war, free of White House spin. Well, good point, Harry. I'm glad you raised it. I haven't seen that quote in the American media so far, and we did learn just a day or so ago that the White House is planning to write the report that was widely promised to be an honest and candid assessment of the so-called surge from the new general on the ground. And it just shows how cynical this White House is, that they will do absolutely anything to push the clock back and to push the timeline in Washington back as far as they possibly can. 888-5-PETER-B, if you'd like to join in. Steve in Watsonville, thanks for your call. You're on the air.
Thanks, Peter. Your discussion got me pulling out a book I have called Addicted to War by Joel Andreas. Are you familiar with it?
I haven't read it, but I know about it.
He quotes from Howard Zinn. He quotes Albert Beveridge was an Indiana senator, 1900, and I was trying to figure out whether it was in the senator in a stump speech, but it would have to ask Howard Zinn. It's in People's History. Beveridge says, we are the ruling race of the world. We will not renounce our part in the mission of our race, trustee under God of the civilization of the world. He has marked us as his chosen people. He has made us adept in government that we may administer government among savage and senile peoples. Now, does that sound like Bush Cheney, like, you know, today or what?
Yeah, we're trying to just tame a different group of savages.
Right below that quote, we've got a picture showing the U.S. subjugating the Philippines with brute force. U.S. soldiers ordered to burn and kill all. They did. By the time the Filipinos were defeated, 600,000 had died. They include a picture showing U.S. soldiers standing on the bones of the Filipinos who had died in the war. And there's like thousands of just bones, their skeletons.
Well, we have a very sordid history, Steve, that we rarely acknowledge of U.S. imperialism and turning a blind eye to the freedom and liberty of others.
Wouldn't it be neat if every history student in every high school in the United States had to read Howard Zinn?
I think it would be great to make that required reading.
No, why?
Thank you, Steve. Now to Cynthia in Monterey. Hello, Cynthia.
Hi, Peter. You know, that's the Iraqi army not being mentioned in the strategic military strategy, whatever he is, the colonel, whatever he said. That's just a minor oversight, just like Katrina, you know, wasn't a Hurricane 5 coming and the levees would hold. A minor oversight. They didn't mean nothing by that, Peter. It's a minor oversight.
Just a little accident, huh?
They just, you know, their military strategic council has been depleted so terribly. I don't know what happened to Caleb Carr, who was a military strategist and historian, and I don't know what happened to John Douglas, who was an FBI profiler, because I don't remember any profile being done on Padilla, do you?
No, not that I know of.
Yeah, like what happened to all these,
we're
these
get
people
in next,
that had more
next,
sound
next week,
reasoning?
Cynthia, next week we'll give you some extensive coverage of the Padilla verdict. I am stunned by it, and even the New York Times is editorializing today, saying that they think the jury got it right. And I think this was a show trial of the lowest order, and while I make no defense for Padilla and his past, it's clear to me that he was a bit player, and they built a case around him mainly on the strength of one document, an alleged application form.
How would they know how to keep tabs on him, such a minor player, like you say? I mean, he wouldn't be like of like interest, really, except as a show trial, as
a
prop.
It's just he was a U.S. citizen who fell into their trap, and they played this case for everything they could. Thanks for your call, and thanks for joining me today. I'm Peter B. Collins. Coming up next, We're going to talk about the NAFTA Superhighway.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Doesn't it seem that the service is lacking at most service stations? Well, not at the Karma Shell at Rio Road and the Valero at Mid-Karma Valley Shopping Center. We take care of our customers. Karma Shell is happy to pump your gas and check under your hood at your request for no extra charge. At Mid-Karma Valley Valero, we offer expert car repair at reasonable rates with a fast turnaround. We do tune-ups, brakes, safety checks, and a 26-point inspection with an oil change. We specialize in Lexus and Toyota. Our mechanic is ASE certified. Call us at 624-0722. That's 624-0722. Karma Shell at Rio Road and Mid-Karma Valley Valero, putting the service back in service stations.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Come on in and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones, everything's a taste you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a pillar affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus too, a side of couscous and a baba ganoush. Yeah, open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery in PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
This portion of the Peter B. Collins Show is dedicated to Ben and Salinas, the first person to tell me about the NAFTA Superhighway. When it's finished, it'll run from Mexico City to Toronto, slicing through the heartland like a dagger sunk into a heifer at the loins and pulled clean to the throat. It'll be 4 football fields wide, an expansive gully of concrete, noise and exhaust, swelled with cars, trucks, trains, and pipelines, carrying water, wires, and God knows what else. Through towns large and small, it'll run, plowing under family farms, subdevelopments, acres of wilderness, with high-tech electronic customs monitors, freight from China, offloaded into non-unionized Mexican ports. It'll travel north, crossing the border with nary a speed bump, bound for Kansas City, where the cheap goods manufactured in booming Far East factories will head into Walmart.
No technological breakdown. Oh no, this is the road to hell.
I just read the opening paragraph from a powerful story in the August 27th edition of The Nation. Its author, journalist Christopher Hayes, joins us right now. Chris, welcome back to our program.
Thanks for having me, Peter.
You really paint quite a picture there.
Yeah, except the I was waiting for you to drop the sort of line that comes a few paragraphs later where I say the only...
Wait, we don't want to ruin it. I mean, come on, you're the kind of guy who would tell me how the Harry Potter book ends.
That's right. Should I tell people to buy the magazine article to find out how it ends?
Well, no, we're going to have some fun with this because what we're talking about is an urban/rural myth or legend that has taken on great proportions, and in a lengthy article in The Nation, Chris, you have taken apart the pieces that have been assembled by some hysterical people, to be fair, on both sides of the political spectrum. And it is woven with some portions of truth, some portions of speculation, and a whole lot of fear and loathing over trade agreements like NAFTA and like the forthcoming deal that is quietly being worked on with Canada.
Yeah, that's about as, you know, I've done a few radio interviews, and that's the most accurate description I've heard of the article. There is, what makes it interesting is a few things. One is exactly what you mentioned. There is this very rich mythology that's grown up around it, and I sort of posit that it has a lot to do with a lot of different things, but one of the things it has to do is people's fundamental sense of alienation from the mechanisms by which this sort of trade agenda and kind of global corporate liberal trade liberalization has been implemented.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing. The other thing is that, it, like you said, it's sort of sewn together from scraps of fact, this mythology. So there is no highway that's on the book somewhere that's going to run up through the gut of the country that you might read about in different websites. But
now, hold on, you just blew it here. Because I have a very expensive drummer here who is going to give us the big drum roll. Here we go. Now, Chris Hayes, is there such thing as a proposed NAFTA superhighway?
No, there is no such thing.
See, we have all kinds of devices here in radio that aren't available to you in print.
Yeah, I know. I wish I actually could have, you know, cued drum roll in the article.
Well, you know, the first inkling that I got of this really started with the NAFTA agreement, which has been delayed and deferred and massaged over and over again, which would permit massive numbers of Mexican trucks onto America's interstate
right.
highways. This was battled by unions and by anti-immigration folks on various fronts. And what is the status of that? There are some trucks from Mexico that are now permitted under NAFTA to enter the United States, but it's not carte blanche, right?
That's right, yeah. Basically, there was a sort of huge... This is a perfect example of the sort of thing that that they tried to kind of do quickly and sort of out of the spotlight, and then there was a huge outcry. And in some sense, the theme of the article is that, rightly or wrongly, sometimes for terrible motivations, sometimes for totally legitimate ones, what keeps happening in this kind of sphere is that, you know, some group of elites thinks, well, no one's really going to care if we do X, say, you know, sell the Dubai port to a private company or
mm-hmm.
Privatize this road in Texas or allow...
Well, how about the Indiana Toll Road or the Chicago Skyway?
Exactly. Then no one's going to care about this. And then time and time again, people raise a huge outcry. So
mm-hmm.
the Mexican trucks issue is one that really, and this, and again, it was a sort of left-right coalition. There were unions that were concerned about it, the Teamsters particularly, because mm-hmm. of, you know, low-wage Mexican truck drivers, sort of depressing wages up here, and then also this very strong kind of nationalistic element that didn't want these, you know, Mexican trucks careening around U.S. highways.
Well, I also think there is a legitimate concern over the safety of trucks
yeah.
from Mexico that is not necessarily driven by racism or by, you know, labor interests or that sort of thing.
No, I would agree. There's a lot of sort of motivations in there. And what's ended up happening is that they had to walk it back and walk it back and walk it back, and there was a huge outcry, and now they sort of pared it down to what they're calling a pilot program. So I think there's something like 200 trucks, I want to say,
mm-hmm.
somewhere between 150 and 200 trucks that have been pre-approved, and the official line is that they're going to sort of slowly see how this works and sort of and then take it from there. So
do they have to, you know, have appropriate banners marking them and a thing on the side that says "We love gringos"?
I think that was that didn't quite make it into the final policy.
Uh-huh. All right, now Chris, one of the other things that drives this is a story that surfaced about a year ago. That Halliburton's KBR was given a no-bid contract of about $300 million to build four or five detention camps, presumably for so-called illegal immigrants. But the most paranoid on the left were concerned that this was a place where they're going to round up dissidents and lock them up. There's another thing that fuels this fear of activities either near the border or related to NAFTA. Have you, this doesn't appear in your article, but have you been able to suss out anything further on that? The one story that we found about it was in The Progressive, and I think Ruth Conniff is an editor there who we interviewed about it, but we've been unable to find out much more about that story.
You know, I have come across that. In fact, I read Ruth's article. It is the only sort of in-depth discussion I've seen of it. It's interesting because that is something that doesn't, that's an issue that doesn't sort of come up in this NAFTA highway mythology. And I think because it doesn't quite interlock with the sort of set of sort of, you know, kind of nationalist concerns that are driving the most sort of fervent opposition to the so-called NAFTA highway.
Mm-hmm.
But what it does have in common with the NAFTA highway issue, and particularly with what's going on in Texas, which is where a lot of the kind of germ of the urban legend sort of sprouted, is a massive privatized tollway that the state is sort of pushing down the throats of a sort of unwilling citizenry in Texas. And I think what ties them together and what is sort of fertile soil for people, for conspiracy theorists and people with really legitimate fears, is this notion that all it's sort of the creeping privatization of every last sort of last function of government, from
mm-hmm.
detention to the provision of the most basic public good like a highway, which going all the way back to, you know, in fact, the building of roads is mentioned in the Constitution as a central core government function.
Mm-hmm.
It's so central.
And Chris, let me lift another quote from your article here, because this is rich. You went to Texas and survived, and had a meeting with Texas Transportation Commissioner Rick Williamson, who mm-hmm. spells his name without the benefit of a K. He's one of those Texas personalities, you write, who seem almost self-consciously to will themselves toward caricature. One Democratic staffer in the Capitol casually referred to him as Darth Vader. Texas Monthly recently called him the most hated person in Texas. Owner of a natural gas production company before becoming a state legislator in 85, he has lately been reincarnated as a transit policy wonk, a role he plays as a cross between the mid-20th century road builder Robert Moses and J.R. Ewing from Dallas. The planner as good as old boy. The planner as good old boy. He doesn't suffer from a lack of confidence. "We're the greatest state agency you'll ever interview," he told me. It was his good friend Governor Perry hemorrhaging political capital. It's fallen to Williamson to advocate for the corridor and draw fire from its opponents. So what's proposed, and this is a private toll road, and again, this is part of the fabric that creates the myth of the NAFTA superhighway.
That's right. It's something called the Trans-Texas Corridor, and it was, it was almost sort of a kind of, it was passed in a special session, in the session back in 2003, in almost a kind of Patriot Act-like fashion, in that the legislature at the time was completely distracted by the long, drawn-out battle over redistricting. You'll probably recall that.
Oh, yeah, the Tom DeLay extra districts.
Exactly, the Tom DeLay extra districts. So while all that was going on, and the some of the Democrats had gone across state lines to deny quorum, quorum, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
This bill granting massive authority to build this huge, unprecedentedly large privatized road passes without a single vote in opposition. Basically, what the Trans-Texas Corridor amounts to is three corridors where the state of Texas is going to get a private company to run what's called a build, operate, and transfer privatized road. It's going to be the first of its kind in the country.
And Spain is providing the company that's going to build it?
It's a Spanish company called Cintra. They're a multinational. They've partnered with a Texan company called Zachary, and they operate similar roads, you know, across the world. What's novel about it is, A, the scope. I mean, it's really large, and 500,000 acres could come under the tollway acts. It's very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
The state says projects around $185 billion for the project. A state auditor report projected $210 billion just for the first part of the first of the three corridors. So we're talking massive amounts of money.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong, per se, with spending a lot of money on public infrastructure. The problem is that the way the deal is structured, a lot of that money is going to go into the pocket of this private corporation.
Well, and the state can't afford to pay for it because they've been in the throes of no new taxes pledges since George W. Bush took over from Ann Richards.
That's right. It's really funny. I talked to Republicans both on and off the record, Republican state representatives from conservative districts in Texas, who said things to me like, you know, it's crazy. The voters did not send me to Austin to only make sure we don't raise taxes. That's not my only function. And there are certain things state government has to do. And the gasoline tax in Texas, which pays, you know, like a lot of states, it's sort of, you know, earmarked as the source of revenue for new road construction and road repair. It has not gone up since, now, I want to say, 1994. That's a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
With essentially capped revenue. It hasn't even kept pace with inflation.
Right.
The opponents of the role of the Trans-Texas Corridor, one of the things they say is, hey, look, let's raise the gasoline tax, peg it permanently to inflation so that we have some sort of built-in revenue floor, and we don't have to sort of go like beggars with our hat out trying to get international capital to come in so they could build our roads.
Chris Hayes with us from The Nation magazine. The next edition, the August 27th issue, includes this fascinating story about the mythical NAFTA superhighway. Now, you cite in the article that Rick Perry, who succeeded George W. Bush as governor of Texas, have faced three challengers and only won a re-election with 39% of the vote in 2006. Where did Kinky Friedman come down on the Trans-Texas Highway or whatever it is?
Kinky Friedman, like the other two challengers, was opposed to it. In fact, it ended up being one of the bigger issues in the campaign.
Did he write a song about it?
You know, I don't know if there was a song written about the Trans-Texas Corridor, although I wouldn't put it past him.
Very interesting. Now, Chris, our coverage would not be complete if we don't take a closer look at the entity that parallels these murky worldwide bodies, you know, like the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations, the NASCO Group, which is North America's Super Corridor Organization. This is a massive entity, right, with three people?
Yeah, that was actually pretty funny. NASCO is, in some senses, one of the organizations that has unwittingly sort of kicked off a lot of the urban legend, because they put this this map on their website that traced, you know, essentially traced the I-35 corridor. Now, NASCO is a, you know, it's a membership organization, and it's got both local governments and private entities from all three countries. And it's clear their agenda is to, you know, basically push for public investment in infrastructure that's going to make the goods from these businesses and the three companies travel faster. It's not particularly high-minded or noble, but it's also not, you know, some evil cabal.
Mm-hmm.
But I was expecting, you know, given the role that NASCO plays in the whole mythology that surrounds the highway, when I went to meet with them, they're basically in sort of off to the side in like borrowed office space in a downtown Dallas law firm, and there's just three of them.
Now, do they get funding from KBR?
I don't know. That's a good question. I looked at their membership list, and as far as I know, KBR is not a member of NASCAR.
Now, what about the Kansas angle? Because there are folks in Kansas who have dreams of creating a distribution channel or a highway that would actually permit them to use a deep water port in Mexico so that we could get cheap goods up to Kansas City and straight into Walmarts in the heartland of the country.
Yeah, I mean, this is, again, this is the part of it where there are these facts, even if no one's building this sort of central highway. There is this port on the Mexican, on the Pacific coast of Mexico, called Lázaro Cárdenas, and it's the only real deep water port in all of Mexico, and there's a bonanza of investment going in there because the West Coast ports in the U.S. are A, unionized, and B, almost near capacity. Once the goods went through there, the plan is that they would run up through rail. Kansas City Southern Railroad has purchased the rail tracks up to Kansas City. And at Kansas City, there's this business improvement group that wants to turn Kansas City into what they call a smart port. Now, when you hear smart port, I thought, oh, they're actually going to, like, build a port. But really, it's more sort of conceptual that it's going to be this kind of multimodal transportation hub. And again, similar to NASCO, this is not necessarily, like, you know, high-minded, great public policy. I mean, essentially, it's a lot of private entities trying to get public dollars to smooth over their costs. But at the same time, it also, the smart port group in Kansas City, like NASCO, I don't think is commanding huge amounts of weight in places like Washington, D.C.
And, Chris, I know you need to get going in a minute because you're going to hitchhike down the NAFTA Superhighway. anything else you want to add? This is a fascinating story, and I'm very pleased to bring the truth to our listeners.
Yeah, well, you know, one thing that I did want to say, and this is something that I've been going back and forth with a few people. You know, I do think that it's a fine line, and one of the things I tried to get at the piece is, you know, there are some really dark places out of which this mythology arises, some really, you know, unseemly nationalism and chauvinism and some racism mixed in, etc.
Now, wait a minute. Are you describing the pea brain of Tom Tancredo?
Yeah, someone like Tom Tancredo would be sort of a good example of some of those dark impulses. But there's also mixed in with that, and that's what I think makes this an interesting topic and an interesting area. Mixed in with that, there's a lot of stuff that's real legitimate. Anxieties about, you know, the way that globalization is being managed, anxieties about being sort of locked out of a government that seems to sort of answer to the highest bidder and to sort of do corporate bidding, etc. And all this stuff is kind of mixed together in this very complicated and interesting brew that I think has been real hard for politicians to understand, real hard for members of the press to understand, real hard for a lot of people, I think, on both sides of the political divide to understand. But I think that it's I was really amazed at the depth and breadth of the sentiment and the degree to which it's spreading, and I think it's going to play a really big role in the next year and the next election. I think it's important for progressives particularly to sort of look at it head on and sort of figure out how they're going to go about marshaling that sentiment.
Mm-hmm. Well, Christopher Hayes from The Nation, thanks for joining us again today. Your Sicko front page story or cover story a few months, back was very good, and this is excellent, too. Thanks a lot.
It's nice of you to say.
All right, we'll talk again soon.
Yeah, look forward to it.
Chris Hayes from The Nation. We'll take your calls after a break here if you want to comment on this 888-5-PETER-B. And that's Chris Hayes. He's hitchhiking on a Mexican truck southbound on the NAFTA Superhighway. You're listening to The Peter B. Collins Show, aren't you? Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Two great Chinese restaurants, two great locations, one great American name.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Chinese food prepared to order every day. Personally, I love the chow fun noodles. Jim's Restaurant is now celebrating its 8th anniversary at 1584 Del Monte. Join the party. Buy lunch or dinner for four at Jim's in Seaside and get a free order of tempura vegetables. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117 for great takeout.
Jim's Restaurant in Prunedale is a local treasure. Jim's owner and chef, Stephen Lowe, has over 20 years of experience in renowned San Francisco restaurants. Chef Lowe provides his loyal clientele with the best of East meets West, including the finest steaks in Monterey County. Chef Lowe enhances classic American and Chinese dishes with delicious French and Italian entrees and sauces. Jim's Restaurant in Prunedale transcends categories with a unique pace-setting menu and family-friendly prices. Jim's in Prunedale is open daily for lunch and dinner. Stop by 8069 San Miguel Canyon Road or call Chef Stephen Lowe at 663-4888 for carryout to die for.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. This story just broke, and thanks to Brian Urban, our assistant producer here, who is not an urban legend, by the way. He's real. He was surfing the web and found this breaking news. In an unprecedented order, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court ordered the Bush administration to respond to a request it received last week from the ACLU, the dreaded lefty American Civil Liberties Union, for orders and legal papers discussing the scope of the government's authority to engage in the secret wiretapping of Americans. Now, this is a major breakthrough because in San Francisco this week, a three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit was clearly having a hard time with the government's presentation, saying that nobody can sue over this because nobody can prove that they have standing, because nobody can prove that they've been spied on, because the government won't tell us, because it's secret. And now that veil is being pierced by the FISA court in Washington, not by the wacky liberals on the Ninth Circuit here in San Francisco. Watch this story, friends. I think it's going to go someplace, and it's slightly encouraging to a guy like me. Ben and Salinas, great to hear from you, Ben. Thanks for your call today.
Yes, Peter. That gives us the hope that maybe we'll get Cheney and Rove for their treason yet, huh?
Well, it's slightly encouraging. I mean, after the Democratic sellout, which essentially gave them amnesty for this,
yeah.
I think they undercut the potential to impeach over domestic spying.
But isn't that amnesty spelled Alberto Gonzalez?
No, not quite.
Okay, and your previous guest, I called up, tried to challenge him. The finances for this myth that he said that, in other words, he essentially was saying that what I have said, that this international superhighway is a myth, it's not being financed by the government of Spain, the contracts and the financing to give them international protection, it's not given, this whole project is not being given embassy status by the United States, the security is not going to be handled by Red China. That this is all a myth, and those FEMA concentration camps don't exist. Peter, if I'm wrong that there's no international superhighway and these concentration camps do not exist, I will go to San Francisco on high noon and I will kiss your ass in the middle of Market and Van Ness. And I'll tell you what, this guy, he writes for The Nation magazine.
Right.
Are these good guys or bad guys, Peter, in your opinion?
I think he's a good guy.
Okay, well then, I pray to him that I be proven wrong, and I will, when I'm wrong, I will admit it. But you know what? My mistrust is so deep, and when you leave with that article about the FISA courts,
mm-hmm.
How does it feel to be right and wrong in one sentence? I feel vindicated, and at once I feel a ray of hope. We may get an election, and we may get our country back yet, thanks to soldiers like Peter B. and Ben of Salinas. And if I'm wrong, I will be proud to be wrong on this one.
Well, Ben, I want to make one thing really clear.
Yes, sir.
I'm glad of the questions you've raised, and I don't think you're crazy.
Well, I don't live in fear, and I am truly proud of all good Americans. I don't give a damn if they're Republicans or Democrats. Just be a good American. Don't be a Hillary. Don't be a sellout. Don't be a Bush. Be a Kucinich. Even a Ron Paul. There's some things about that dude that I like. I don't think he'd make a good president, and he's got a chance in hell like Kucinich.
Right.
But damn it, when are we going to get a real president that speaks for we the people, Peter? Thank you for letting me respond to that gentleman. I hope he's listening.
Ben, I love you, and I love your passion. Thanks for your call today. We got to take a break, and we'll return with Kevin Danaher on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Tired of commuting an hour or more every day so you can make money for somebody else? Would you like to build a successful home-based business? Let Tanya Simmons show you how. Attend the CyberWise Opportunity Rally on Saturday, August 25th at 1:30 p.m. The CyberWise Opportunity Rally will be held at the Valley Center Bowl in Salinas. Call John Gaines at 831-229-2546 to reserve your place at the CyberWise Opportunity Rally. Call John Gaines now at 229-2546. That number again is 229-2546.
Sober Stones, do you have yours yet? Big Sur Jade is now available for you. This rare, beautiful, deep green jade is found in a tiny cove south of Big Sur, used by Native Americans in healing for hundreds of years. Keep one in your pocket to remind you of your commitment to living life present and sober. Go to SoberStones.com, SoberStones.com for your beautiful pocket jade. Touch it, feel it every day. Look at it. Sober Stones.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
After tragedy at the Crandall Canyon Mine,
we have suspended the underground portion of the rescue operation.
The Fed comes to the rescue.
You've had a big sigh of relief today from the stock market.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. It's been 11 days since the mine collapse that trapped six men.
We always hold out hope, but the chances are diminishing as each hour passes.
And hope diminished dramatically today since the tragedy last night. CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman reports.
The rescue efforts to find the six trapped miners are essentially on hold.
We have suspended indefinitely the underground portion of this rescue effort.
Richard Stickler is the top federal official here. The move came after three rescue workers were killed last night. They had been slowly digging through the mine debris, hoping to reach the trapped men, when part of the mine came down on them. The search for the missing miners will go on, but only from above ground. Rescue crews will drill holes into the mine, hoping to find the men. Steve Futterman, CBS News at the command post in Huntington, Utah.
Scientists at the University of Utah have been measuring the so-called bumps deep in the mountain.
We have recorded and located a total of 22 of these after events since the main collapse on August 6, indicating that the ground in the mine is continuing to shift and settle, and in the case of last night, even collapsed to some extent.
Spokesman Lee Siegel says the mountain is collapsing in slow motion. Now this.
Will you love me when I'm 6?
Of course I will love you when you're 6.
Will you love me when I'm 10?
I will love you when you're 10.
They'll always be your little one, which is why we've introduced the all-new 2008 Ford Taurus, rated the safest full-size car in America.
When I'm 15?
And while you can't engineer a mother's love, you can engineer safety. And according to NHTSA government crash tests, Taurus earned perfect 5-star crash test safety ratings for front and side impacts. Plus, with optional electronic stability control, Taurus is an IIHS top safety pick.
Will you love me when I'm as old as you?
Even when you're as old as me.
The all-new 28-mile-per-gallon Ford Taurus. Visit your Ford dealer or go to FordVehicles.com.
Based on both NHTSA 5-star crash test ratings and with optional ESC IIHS top safety pick. Star ratings are part of the U.S. Department of Transportation SaferCar.gov program. www.safercar.gov. EPA estimated 18 City 28 Highway Front Wheel Drive.
It turned out to be a good day in the market. CBS News reporter Claire Leka at the New York Stock Exchange.
It was a dramatic move by the Federal Reserve on Wall Street today, the first intermeeting rate cut since the days right after the September 11th attacks. The Federal Reserve stepping in, slashing the symbolic discount rate by 0.5%. The Dow ending up surging triple digits on this news today.
The Dow closed 233 points higher at 13,079, a gain of nearly 2%. The S&P 500 rose 2.5%. CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason has been following this story.
The market all week has been as nervous, as anxious, as fearful as I've seen it in years. And we have finally a moment where you have a sigh of relief. Is this over? I don't think so necessarily. But clearly for a moment, everybody's taking a step back and saying, okay, we can relax.
The Fed did not change the benchmark federal funds rate, which affects the rates consumers pay to borrow. Hurricane Dean, still growing, slammed into the eastern Caribbean today. Rain poured down on the island of Martinique. Fierce wind tore roofs from homes and from a hospital on St. Lucia, and two people drowned in floodwaters. A woman and her 7-year-old son were killed on Dominica when a mudslide crushed their home. Dean, which could become a Category 4 hurricane before long, is expected to hit Jamaica by Sunday. Basil Smith is director of tourism there.
All the resorts are making the necessary precautions to batten down windows, making sure water supplies are adequate should supplies be interrupted, doing the usual backup checks.
The storm's projected to be in the Gulf of Mexico next week. In Peru, 2 days after the monster earthquake, it's a sad and ugly scene. Electra Anderson is an American in Lima.
There's dead bodies everywhere out in the streets. I mean, people are going around picking up the cover off the face of people to see if it's their relative.
At least 510 people are dead. Road damage has slowed the delivery of aid to the hardest hit region. Today, people ransacked a market and looted a refrigerated trailer. Dennis Hastert made it official today.
I have decided not to seek another term of Congress.
Last year, he was forced to step down as Speaker when Democrats won control of the House. Hastert is 65. He's represented his Northern Illinois district for 20 years. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Pump 4 is on. Go ahead and fill.
Don't get conservative on your summer travel plans because of high gas prices. Just get a Garmin and make every trip more efficient. Garmin's portable navigators put a world of maps and travel info at your fingertips. Tap the screen to look up restaurants, hotels, and attractions, and get voice-prompted directions.
Turn right on Broadway.
Some Garmin navigators even list gas prices and can route you to the station with the cheapest fill-up. Garmin, don't just get there. Arrive.
Sears Book Chapter 9, Tires and Dads. It all began when Jill got her license. Her father looked at the family car's ball tires and panicked. He went straight to Sears Auto Center and bought 4 Goodyear tires at the lowest prices guaranteed. So when Jill safely rolls in at $9.59, he's glad he chose the best. This life chapter and the lowest prices on Goodyear tires can be found in the Sears Book. For a limited time, get a $20 or $40 Visa cash card with purchase of 4 select Goodyear tires. Sears, where it begins.
Rebate offer ends 8/25/07. Exclusions apply.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to another hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your humble host, Peter B., joining you from San Francisco. This hour, not intentionally, is a green hour. In about 30 minutes, Jeremiah Bauman will join us from Environment Oregon. There's an effort to amend Measure 37 to protect forests and other farmlands, too. We'll get the lowdown on that from Jeremiah coming up in about half an hour.
World has changed so very, way it used to be.
And for some people, going green happens once a year on St. Patrick's Day. But Kevin Danaher has been at it for a while, co-founder of Global Exchange, and together with a couple of his colleagues, he's co-authored a book called Building the Green Economy, subtitled Success Stories from the Grassroots, and the grass is in green there. In fact, there's a lot of green on the cover here. Hello, Kevin.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Nice to talk with you again.
Same here.
You've been working hard. Why don't you first update us on the Green Festivals? It's that season, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. We do the Green Festival in Washington, D.C. D.C. at the D.C. Convention Center is October 6th and 7th. The San Francisco Green Festival is November 9th, 10th, 11th. And then we have added Chicago. We just did our first show in Chicago just this past April, and we had 31,000 people come through the door, and we're adding this year new Seattle. So the Seattle Center show this year is April 12th and 13th, and then Chicago show at Navy Pier is May 17th and 18th. And we're getting incredible response. People are showing that, you know, at least the ones who don't listen to Hannity and Combs, they're getting it that we're destroying the planet, we're destroying the biological systems that support human life, and we got to start changing the nature of the economy to make it sustainable.
Just one correction: when you talk about those guys on the Fox News channel, it's Hannity and Combs.
Yeah, right. Combs. It's like he's a straw man. Is he real? Is he there? Is he three-dimensional or two-dimensional?
I think his microphone is, you know, permanently turned down two notches from Sean's.
Well, you know, I was on one time with them. I've been on their show a bunch of times. I was on one time, and it was about the war, and the first person attacking me was him, and I thought it was Hannity. And I'm like, wait a minute, you're supposed to be the liberal. You're attacking me because I'm for peace, and this war is showing itself to be a disaster. It just, the whole spectrum is so shifted to the right. You know?
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things, the book is fascinating. It's got a lot of great stories. It's the kind of thing you can pick up and read for a while and come back to later. You cover a whole range of subjects that you include under the broad idea of green and green economy. And let me start off in the introduction here, Kevin, where you expand the definition of green.
Yeah.
Tell us what it means to you. It's more than hybrids and solar power and wind power and alternative energy.
Well, it's a lot about local control. These stories are about local people, not you know, architects, PhDs, presidents, anything like that. It's just regular folks who got themselves organized, and that's the key element that runs through it, whether it's shutting down a prison, putting wind power on a Native American reservation, creating a company that's going to take liquid worm poop, liquid compost, put it in recycled soda bottles, and sell it in stores as plant food. The company's TerraCycle was started by a 24-year-old college dropout. It's all these cases, nice little short chapters, stories about people, regular people, who got their act together and got organized. And there's some chapters in the book that people will say, well, what's green about this? Local control lays the basis for green. Because look at the example of, let's say, food. If you've got organic garlic that's coming from China, as opposed to some non-organic garlic that's coming from Gilroy,
yeah.
I'll take the Gilroy garlic because the effect on the planet, and not to mention the slave labor wages paid in China or anything like that, but just all the transportation costs. The average piece of food in the United States travels about 1,500 miles from where it was grown to your plate on average. That's just incredibly inefficient. So
you also identify social justice as an issue, and just the other day, as we were talking about China, with the recall of 19 million toys due to lead paint and loose magnets, the story broke about the newest disease, a blue pig syndrome of some sort. And what I learned from that is that there is a growing organic farming industry in China.
Oh, yeah.
But it's the state officials who cherry-pick the organic produce, and it doesn't go to export, and it doesn't go to the average Chinese citizen.
Yeah, that's the problem with an undemocratic system where people, when I was over there a year and a half ago, there was an accident between a car and a bicycle rider. The car was being driven by a local government official, and, of course, he gets out. It was his fault, but he gets out and, really, you know, starts copping attitude. 10,000 people rioted in the streets over this one little accident. So that tells you there's a lot of kindling that's just waiting for a match. You got to remember that the one-child policy resulted in a lot of female infanticide, so you got a disproportionate number of males to females now. So you got guys who can't get married and they can't get a job. They're headed for an environmental and social explosion if they don't watch out.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Danaher with us from Global Exchange and co-author with two of his colleagues, let's name them, Shannon Biggs and Jason Mark, of this new book, Building the Green Economy, Success Stories from the Grassroots. And it's out in a soft cover from Poly Point Press. Set you back less than $17 at your local independent bookstore. Or go to Powell's online, particularly our listeners in Portland. That's a great independent bookstore to support. Now, this is just serendipity, Kevin, but a news release came in from some PR agency, and I get a lot of this stuff, and I don't always ask for it. And I'm trying to figure out the angle here, but just to humor me for a moment. The headline reads, Executives Dumping Environmentally Unfriendly Outsourcers. And the lead here is, green factors are forcing a new stage of expectations on global outsourcing suppliers. Environmental concerns have entered into the formal selection process of outsourcing vendors. According to a recent Brown Wilson Group, authors of the Black Book of Outsourcing, that's their plug. Anyway, they're saying 21% of publicly traded companies that outsource functions have added green policies and performance demands to their vendor contractual arrangements. Now, that sounds good on the face of it, but don't we have a number of issues here that often get greenwashed by companies that want to try to imbue themselves with a green image, while at the same time they don't address the low wages, the sweatshop conditions that occur in many of these outsource venues?
Yeah, you got a whole spectrum from, at the one end, just the Exxon Mobil screw the environment types to super green at the other end. And then along the way, there's a lot of movement with that. It starts with greenwashing, where they're spending more money on the propaganda promoting the reform than the actual reform itself. And then you got companies that are really, really committed to this because they're thinking about their grandchildren. You know, a lot of them are run by guys in their 60s, 70s. They're starting to think about legacy and what they're leaving for the planet. And that's why we got into this thing of trying to merge the social justice and the environment. If I can read you one piece, mm-hmm. We say, ecology teaches that all living things are interconnected. That insight can prompt an expansion of the definition of green so that green also comes to mean empathy and solidarity, compassion and kindness. Ecological thinking says that we cannot afford to sacrifice the sweatshop worker or the sea turtle because those living beings are part of us and we are dependent on them whether we realize it or not. So it's this integrative, holistic thinking. And what a lot of these business people, the hipper business people, are realizing is you can actually structure your business plan in a way that being good to the environment and other people, not exploiting nature, not exploiting humans, can increase your financial bottom line if it's done right. So once you cross that boundary into a region where ecological thinking increases your profits, where you can make more profits saving nature than destroying nature, that's a different system. That's a different mentality and a different business model.
And just one more hit from this press release. I'm amused by it. They list what they call outsourcing's Green 50, the top honor roll. So on the one hand, these are companies that are busy decimating, you know, the American workforce by outsourcing the jobs, and then they're getting praised for doing it in a green manner.
Well, they mentioned education comes in because the very same people who tend to shop at Walmart are the same working class people whose jobs are being shipped to China.
Yeah.
We've got to educate people about the way this system works. And if we allow the system to be run solely on a single bottom line of profitability and we don't include social equity and environmental restoration, we're going to be screwed. I just saw last night Leo DiCaprio's new film, The 11th Hour.
Yeah.
And, you know, about 20% at the end is all the good green stuff that's happening, but about 80% of it is we're in deep doo-doo. The topsoil, the ocean water, the drinking water, the air, the asthma rates, all this, all the biological systems that prop us up and make life, human life possible are getting trashed. So there's this growing recognition that we got to change direction because every day when people pick up the newspaper, they see Greenland is melting. And just Greenland alone, forget the Arctic and the Antarctic, just Greenland will raise ocean levels over 20 feet. So Treasure Island in San Francisco, Lennar Corporation out of Florida is talking about billions of dollars of investment. It's 8 feet above sea level, Treasure Island. You better be building some big levees, you know.
Yeah, well, they can use the plans that weren't implemented in New Orleans.
You know, notice Donald Trump is selling his mansion down in West Palm Beach because it's about 12 feet above sea level. Maybe he reads books.
I think it's near Key Largo, right?
It's no, it's not in the Keys, actually. It's in West Palm Beach. It's
You know, I drove past it. I think it's called Key Largo.
Mar-de-Lago.
Mar-de-Lago.
Oh, yeah,
there
Mar-de-Lago.
We go. Yeah, they didn't invite me in.
I'm shocked. I would think you'd be at the top of his guest list.
Oh, indeed. We're going to take a break and continue with Kevin Danaher. And when we return, I want to ask how we hold on to the integrity of the green movement and what green really means as corporate entities like the press release I just read reflects try to co-opt the green identity and use it for their propaganda purposes. If you have a question or a comment, you can bring it on right now. Call us from your Prius toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. Kevin Danaher's new book is Building the Green Economy, Success Stories from the Grassroots. We'll continue in a moment. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Fair time again, and this year we're homegrown at the Monterey County Fair. We're talking 6 big days of family-packed entertainment from Tuesday, August 14th through Sunday, August 19th. Stop by every day for free headline entertainment, including the Paul Thorne Band, War, Pam Tillis, Night Ranger, plus our homegrown band showcase featuring top local bands. Your entire family will love the free exhibits, including the Busy Bee Dogs and Hugo the One Man Band. You will love the Beer and Wine Pavilion featuring homegrown beers and wines. All this and much, much more just for $8. If you're an adult, admission for 6 to 12-year-olds is only $4, and kids under 6 get in for free. Kids' Day is Tuesday, Seniors' Day is Wednesday, and Military Appreciation Day is Thursday. From August 14th through August 19th, the fun will be at the 2007 Monterey Fair. Don't miss it. For information and to buy tickets, go online at www.montereycountyfair.com or call the fair office at 831-372-1000. That's 831-372-1000 for the homegrown Monterey County Fair.
Hi, this is Paul.
And Cynthia.
Of the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden. And we'd like to thank you for supporting this locally owned and operated Carmel business for nearly 40 years.
Nestled in Carmel by the Sea, the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden occupy a beautiful space on Dolores between 5th and 6th, showcasing an array of books on local interest, new releases, bestsellers, novels, children's, metaphysical, and much more. Plus, you'll enjoy taking a good look at our music, healing tools, cards, statuary, fountains, and more.
Proud to be a part of the Carmel business community, we invite you to see us soon.
Pilgrim's Way offers one-on-one intuitive counseling in the bookstore. You may call ahead for an appointment or just walk in. Whether you're a local resident or a visitor to our beautiful peninsula, we have something for everyone.
The Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden, between 5th and 6th on Dolores.
Discover an imaginative adventure. Pick up a good read at the Pilgrim's Way, Carmel.
Happy Friday, everybody. Let's take a look at traffic and get you to your destination safely. All right, we're talking about Gilroy, southbound 101 after 10th Street at Pacheco Pass. Injury crash, three vehicles blocking the two left lane. We have emergency crews on scene and traffic in the area rather congested, to say the least. Also, want to mention in, well, we had another Gilroy problem, but it's just cleared up. So we're going to go on over to Monterey. Expect delays day through Sunday around the Mazda Raceway at Laguna Seca for the Monterey Historic Automobile Races. In Prunedale, southbound 101 after Echo Valley Road, motorhome and a pickup truck cleared off to the right shoulder involved in the crash, I might add. southern Monterey County. It's an fender bender on the right shoulder. It's Highway 1 south of Nepathe. A three-car crash. It is on the, apparently CHP is on the scene. And Santa Clara County, 152 at Casa de Fruto, a crash there.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and a note for our listeners in Portland on 620 KPOJ. Coming up in the next segment, we'll be joined by Jeremiah Bauman of Environment Oregon. Wants to talk to you about some key amendments to Measure 37 to try to reduce development. And in particular, he wants to protect the Willamette Valley. Had a great Willamette Pinot Noir last night. That's my self-interest there. We continue with Kevin Danaher. As we mentioned, there's a new book out he co-authored called Building the Green Economy, Success Stories from the Grassroots. And it's chock full of inspiration and ideas, things that go beyond some of the normal alternative energy, alternative foods issues. And I recommend it to you. A lot of great information in it. Kevin, the question I posed before the break, we've seen that, for example, the whole term organic has been mangled over the last decade or so as our federal government wrestled with very loose rules promoted by the big agribusiness interests. And I'm concerned that the term green is going to be corrupted in a similar way. And do we need like a council of elder greens or something like that to kind of give an imprimatur to real and credible efforts to protect our environment and the related issues? Or do you have some other way we can try to call out those who attempt to manipulate or abuse the term and the concepts?
Yeah. I think all of these terms are end up being tug of war. Of the, you know, the corporate types are trying to water it down, to lower the standards, to do the greenwashing, to do the minimalist. Global Exchange has done a lot of corporate pressure campaigns. We were involved in rebranding Nike as the sweatshop shoe company. We pressured Starbucks to start buying fair trade certified coffee beans. And these companies just sort of genetically will always try to do the minimalist. They'll always try to comply as little as possible. And you got to dog them. You just got to stay on their tail. You can't get them to change your policy and then walk away and think that, oh, everything is going to be fine now. You got to come back and escalate your demands. We have a section in the book called Business Unusual, Can We Buy Change? And we deal with this contradiction of there's a trend toward green business. Some of those businesses are really genuine. They see that we're destroying the planet and we need to go in a really green direction. And others are going to do the greenwashing thing, and they need to be exposed. If you look at the green festivals, we have a really tight screen. Most of the big corporations can't get into the green festival. We wouldn't let them in.
An example is BP, which has tried to call itself beyond petroleum. They've invested in solar power in Southern California. At the same time, they refuse to fix their leaky pipelines, and they're polluting the Alaska wilds.
Yep, and Shell is getting big into solar energy. But see, here's the other side of the contradiction is the fact that they're investing in those alternative energies and the fact that they're using green language is a genuflection toward our values. In a sense, they're affirming that we're right. It reminds me of, I did my doctoral dissertation on U.S. policy towards South Africa, and the U.S. government used to say, we abhor apartheid, apartheid's a terrible system, but, and then would be the excuse of, well, we need the minerals, and Mandela's a communist, and you know, that would be the excuse of why they need to keep supporting the white minority regime. But the first part of the statement verified and strengthened our arguments, and we used it in the movement to say, look, even the U.S. government that supports white minority rule says it's awful. So these people, I think what we need to do is take their rhetoric and spin it back and throw it back at them and say, okay, look, here's what you said in your sustainability plan, but you're not living up to it, and mm-hmm. here's what you need to do. So I like the combination. At Global Exchange, we do a combination of the pressure campaigns, don't do that, but then we do the Green Festival and Global Citizen Center and all this green, the Green Economy book to say, look, here's the direction you should be going in. And what we point out in the book is that you got people complying or getting into it at a different level. Some people are super green. Other people, they're buying a frozen organic dinner at Whole Foods. and that's their entry level, or they're switching out their light bulbs for compact fluorescents, or they're feeding organic food to their kids, to their babies, because they've read some article. Okay, that's the entry point. That's the first step, and then you take them the next step and the next step. And I see it going on, particularly in the building industry. If somebody said, what sector of the U.S. economy has been most penetrated by green, I wouldn't hesitate. It's building. Because you're starting to see now where you can make a building be more profitable by building it green at the outset, because it's going to lower your operating costs.
Mm-hmm.
Over 80% of the lifetime cost of a building is your people. So if you're an owner-occupier, and if you're concerned about the health and productivity and absenteeism of your workers, then you build it green, because it's going to pay off in the long run.
It's a great book. It kicks off with the story of Margie Richard, who took on Shell in Norco, Louisiana, racist pollution and bad neighbors there, and goes on to talk about our seed stock and how farmers in North Dakota beat Monsanto at the game that Monsanto has taken on to control the seed stocks and then corrupt them with genetically modified versions. So I want to recommend this book, Building the Green Economy, Success Stories from the Grassroots. Kevin Danaher, is there a website for the book?
They can get the book right off the Global Exchange website. If you go to globalexchange.org, the book's right there on the landing page.
And it includes a blurb from our friend Tom Hartman, too, so it's really well packaged. Thank you, Kevin.
Great being on with you, Peter. Thanks a lot.
Nice to talk with you again. Kevin Danaher, doing a great job there, and don't forget to visit globalexchange.org, too. They're doing a lot of good work. Coming up next, we'll check out the situation in Oregon. Jeremiah Bauman from Environment Oregon will join us to talk about amendments to your Measure 37. We'll find out more in a moment. Here on the Peter B. Collins Show, produced by Katrina Rill.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood Files, sponsored in part by Radio Shack. Do more with your wireless phone with accessories from Radio Shack, where you don't just buy stuff, you do stuff. And by Tourism Ireland. Discover your very own Ireland at discoverireland.com. I'm Charles Osgood. Opponents of the war suggest soldiers hate the war so much that they're driven to take their own lives. The Army has looked into the 99 soldier suicides last year, and Colonel Elspeth Ritchie, an Army psychiatrist, says,
what we have found is not a direct relationship so far between deployment, combat, and suicide. However, we do know that frequent deployments put a real strain on relationships, especially on marriages.
More after this for Radio Shack. Life is full of misconceptions. A lot of people think bald eagles are actually bald. I used to think that upgrading to a new wireless phone would be difficult. Well, at Radio Shack, they've got great plans for new and qualifying existing customers. They also have a great selection of wireless phones and the latest accessories, as well as a variety of wireless carriers. Thanks, Radio Shack, for cutting through the maze and making sense of wireless. Radio Shack, don't just buy stuff, do stuff. I want to tell you about a place in Europe waiting to be discovered where breathtaking natural wonders leave even a seasoned traveler like me speechless. Ancient castles where you can live like a king, bustling cities where culture, fine dining, and vibrant nightlife meet. I'm talking about Ireland, where not a day goes by without something new being discovered. Discover your very own Ireland at discoverireland.com or call 1-800-SHAMROCK for your free Ireland vacation planner. Are American soldiers killing themselves because they hate being in the war? Perhaps, but Colonel Elspeth Ritchie says,
the primary reasons for suicides, when we examine the completed suicide, is failed intimate relationships, failed marriages. About 70 to 80% of cases have that as a factor there.
Nothing new in that, says CBS News military consultant Jeff McCausland.
This type of problem has occurred in every conflict the United States has been involved with, or any country for that matter, soldiers coming back who are depressed, have difficult family relationships, other problems when they return home, or while they're deployed, and sadly seek this as an alternative.
And as Colonel Ritchie has said, frequent and extended deployments do make those problems worse. No denying that, says Jeff McCausland.
And I think one of the most difficult things the force has had to experience is when they've been deployed, told they were going to be there for a particular period of time, and then that was extended because of operational requirements. But certainly there's no doubt from all the leaders I've talked to, that puts a great deal of additional stress on units.
The Osgood File, I'll see you on the television come Sunday morning on CBS. This is Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, Bob Oliver. Don't miss UFO sightings around Monterey Bay. 11 a.m. Saturday on KRXA 540. Phone us live on air. Help confirm many local UFO stories. Then August 25th, 26th, it's the Bay Area UFO Expo with over 80 exhibitors and speakers at San Jose's DoubleTree Inn. UFOs are real.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
Never met a girl that makes me feel as good as you do. You're right. Never a man who makes my dreams real, I say that you do. You're out of sight.
Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. It's good to have you listening. Have I mentioned my email address? You can always reach me and drop me a note. Let me know what you think of the show. Let me know your thoughts about subjects and viewpoints that you hear. And feel free to suggest topics or guests that you think would be a good fit here on the PBC show. My email is easy, peter@peterbcollins.com. Or humblehost@peterbcollins.com. Or if you disagree with me, try full of it. It's just full of it. There's no SH in there. Full of it at peterbcollins.com. And you're always welcome to call if you're listening live here. 888-5-PETER-B is our toll-free number. We got the glitches out of our telephone system, so do join us if you like. 888-573-8372. Joining me now is Jeremiah Bauman. He's advocate for Environment Oregon, grew up in Montana, spent his childhood in Pasco, Washington, and he joined Environment Oregon staff in the spring of 05 after working on the national staff of the state public interest resource group's New Voters Project, where he directed strategic planning and non-student outreach efforts and worked on that campaign. And as director of the state PIRG's Federal Toxics and Environmental Health Program from 2000 to 2003, he directed successful campaigns to expand EPA right-to-know regulations, requiring thousands of companies to start disclosing toxic pollution to the public. And he also developed a chemical plant security campaign to require chemical companies to adopt safer chemicals and processes, particularly after 9/11. Jeremiah Bauman, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show today.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Nice to talk with you, and I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. You're traveling on the East Coast this week, is that right?
That's right. I'm in Boston for the week.
Not bad. I love Boston, so get a little chowder for me, will you?
Will do.
Okay. Now, tell us first of all about Measure 37. I'm sure many of our listeners in Oregon are quite familiar with it, but we have people like me and my listeners here in California who aren't as familiar with the details of some of your ballot measures from the past.
Sure. Well, one important piece of context is that, you know, Oregon has a landscape of forests and farms and open space that is unique and, you know, frankly kind of amazing in a couple of ways. One is just that it is so beautiful. I mean, you can get a very easy access from the cities throughout the state into the mountains, into the forest, out to these fertile farmlands. But the other thing that's unique about that is it's because we've protected these open spaces, we've had a smart strategy for planning where the cities grow so that we're not just having subdivisions leapfrogging a lot across the landscape. And we have, cities growing in a smart and controlled and planned way. Well, Measure 37 came along back in 2004, and it basically proposed that the government should have to pay people whenever land use planning reduces their property value.
Oh, so that's based on the takings concept.
That's exactly right. It basically equates statewide planning for where we do and do not want subdivisions and strip malls with reducing people's property value and taking their property away. And, you know, the campaign featured lots of stories of, you know, elderly Oregonians who have had farms in their family for years and years telling these stories about how they just wanted to build a home or two for their kids in their farmland, but these land use planning rules were preventing them from doing it, and so telling people that's why they should support Measure 37, just to provide basic fairness to family farmers and to family landowners.
And how much did the supporters of Measure 37 spend to get this passed, and where did the money come from, Jeremiah?
Well, that's a very good question. They spent, I believe the figure is right around $3 million. I can't remember the exact number. Ballot measures are a little less expensive in Oregon than they are in California.
Yeah.
But the funding really revealed what was actually going on with Measure 37, which is the money was coming from developers who wanted to build subdivisions and strip malls, and it's coming from timber companies, including a lot of out-of-state timber companies, who own forest land in Oregon, that decided they can make a bigger buck if they turn it into subdivisions and strip malls.
And were there any right-wing think tanks that framed the proposition? Because this whole idea of regulations as takings has been, fancied by some of the right-wingers, some of the so-called wise use movement, some of the evangelicals who believe that Armageddon is on the way and we've got to use up all of our resources before Judgment Day. Was this driven by any of those groups?
It was really led by a group called Oregonians in Action, which focuses primarily on the property rights issue and really, brought that takings frame into it from that perspective. But I think even Oregonians who believe in basic property rights and property rights fairness to some extent got sold a bill of goods by out-of-state timber companies and developers. Because what we're seeing now, because Measure 37 passed, we're now seeing 750,000 acres of Oregon's landscape proposed for development, everything from subdivisions and strip malls up and down our fertile farmlands in the Willamette Valley to pumice mines in the middle of a volcanic national monument out in central Oregon to a golf course on one of the last pristine salmon runs at the Sixes River in southwest Oregon.
What's wrong with that? Because isn't everybody holding a God-given right to build their own McMansion wherever they want?
That's a really good question. I think what's wrong with that is Oregonians are losing the place that they love. You're literally seeing we've got farmers calling us saying, tell me what I can do to help. I voted for Measure 37. I thought this was about saving the family farm, but it's not saving the family farm. I've got developers bringing in subdivisions on every single side of my farm, and they're threatening my water supply.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so the tables have really been turned now, I think, and voters are realizing what was actually hidden beneath that simple-sounding ballot measure.
Mm-hmm. So what was the margin of victory for Measure 37?
It passed with 60% of the vote.
Really?
Yeah, I think partially because, frankly, a lot of the PR for this ballot measure was just misleading. People thought they were helping family farms and family landowners build a couple houses for their kids. They didn't think they were, turning 30,000 acres of coastal forest into subdivisions. And that's what they're getting now.
Jeremiah, I'm looking at your website, and you have a comment here. In fact, 2/3 of Oregonians say today that Measure 37 should be fixed or repealed entirely. So people have had an awakening. Was there a pivotal event, or was this kind of just a gradual understanding of what it really meant?
No, there kind of was. There was a pivotal time frame. The claims to develop under Measure 37 started kind of dribbling in and sped up a little bit over the course of the first year or so, but it was really in late November of 2006 was one of the first hard deadlines into which anybody who had a claim to develop property that was because of a regulation from past proposals that had been passed, people had to file those claims by a date in late November of 2006. So in those last 2 weeks, the number of claims, I think, almost doubled. Suddenly there were so many more properties being proposed, and a lot of the most extreme proposals came in right then. That's when you had Plum Creek Timber Company filed applications for 30,000 acres of coastal forest to turn into largely subdivisions. Simpson Lumber Company up near Portland filed to develop 36,000 acres near a great lake and great recreation spot west of the city. And so that, I think, really woke people up. And they were like, and that's when people said, I don't know what this is all about, but this is not what I voted for. And now I'm suspicious of Measure 37.
That sounds a little bit like a land rush.
It is. It was really a rush to develop.
Mm-hmm.
Unprecedented. I mean, I don't know that any state, no matter how big it is, would see, you know, it's now almost 1 million acres proposed to go from protected open space to subdivisions and strip malls. And all those proposals literally came in a matter of less than 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Now, the legislature in Oregon has passed House Bill 3540, which is a package of reforms to Measure 37. Give us a quick sketch here, Jeremiah, of how it would fix some of the most egregious parts of the previous ballot measure.
Absolutely. And that bill is now actually called Measure 49, and it's on the ballot to be voted on this November in a special election across the state of Oregon.
And just a quick question about that. In a special election with low turnout, do you think that favors your side or makes it more difficult?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, what it really means is people that care about Oregon have got to get out and vote, because in a low turnout election, whichever side gets the most people out to vote is probably going to win.
Right.
So it's really about which side has the most, you know, kind of dedicated supporters. And so that's kind of why our organization is focused on getting the word out that if you care about keeping our forests and our farms and our open space intact, you should make sure and vote yes on 49.
Now, I'm a Californian, but I have a soft spot for the Willamette Valley. I had a great Pinot from there last night. So that's
well,
my...
that's also, you know, it's the Willamette Valley vineyards, and the vineyard owners are really some of the biggest supporters of Measure 49, because, you know, they depend a lot on having access to enough water, and they don't want... people that come to vineyards to go wine tasting don't exactly want to do so in the middle of strip malls and subdivisions.
Right, yeah. So I digress there. Tell us what the key elements are of this new Measure 49, which came out of House Bill 3540.
Absolutely. So Measure 49, what it does, what it would do if we can pass it, is it protects our forests and farmlands by putting common sense limits on what can be developed and what kinds of developments can go forward under Measure 37, while maintaining the basic notion of fairness for small landowners. So it basically says what you can do is if you want fewer than 3 houses on a large rural property, you can go forward with that, assuming that you could have built those when you bought the property. If you want more than 3, first of all, you don't get more than 10 if it's not allowed by our current planning and zoning policies, because we're not going to ruin our landscape over this. You can apply for up to 10, but you have to prove you actually lost property value because land use planning rules prevented you from building those homes.
Mm-hmm.
That's really critical, because most economists say most people have probably actually gained in property value because the land is more valuable as open space and as farm and as forest land than it would be if it was surrounded by strip malls and subdivisions.
Mm-hmm.
And the final piece is it says the most damaging developments, the pumice mines, the gravel pits, the strip malls, can't go forward. That's not what voters were voting for with Measure 37. So commercial industrial claims aren't going to be allowed.
Mm-hmm. Now, coming back to the takings issue and compensation for perceived losses over development rights, et cetera, this is a difficult area once a bill like this is enacted. We've seen here in California where we were successful in defeating Richard Pombo, who chaired the House Resources Committee and was a leading guy trying to eviscerate the Endangered Species Act and promote this whole idea of compensating landowners for imagined, often, losses. How do we rein this in, and how does Measure 49 attempt to deal with that, Jeremiah?
I think it does it in 2 ways. Well, I guess Measure 49 does it in one specific way, which is it actually asks people to put their money where their mouth is, I guess, if you want to actually claim that you have suffered a taking, that you have suffered a loss in property value because of open space protection,
mm-hmm.
You have to actually prove that. You have to get an assessor to document that you've lost it because of the policy going into effect.
Yeah, but let's say I've got 100 acres and I just tell you and maybe even file some planning documents, I'm going to build a theme park there. And then you say, well, you can't do that. And I say, well, I would have made $100 million on a theme park, and I want you to give me the money.
Well, and that's exactly why, you know, to be honest, a lot of these takings, the people promoting this takings point of view and this property rights point of view, that's where it all starts to fall apart. When you look at Measure 37, it never actually had anybody prove they ever lost any money. In fact, it didn't give the government any tool for challenging them. So you could say, I want to build 10 houses, and I would have made $100 million, so pay me $100 million, you'll let me build 10 houses.
Mm-hmm.
There's no tool for the government to just at least point out 10 houses aren't worth $100 million. There's no chance what you're saying makes any sense.
Yeah, some
that's
of those...
part of what Measure 49 does is say, all right, well, then prove it and show us where you lost the property value.
And no
The reality is they mostly didn't.
No Hollywood accounting permitted. Jeremiah, we got to take a break. We'll return in just a moment. We're talking with Jeremiah Bauman from Environment Oregon. And if you're listening in Coos Bay and you have a question or a comment, I'd love to hear your thoughts. Were you hoodwinked by Measure 37? And are you one of the two-thirds of Oregonians ready to fix it or repeal it today? And are you prepared to support Measure 49 in this special election in November? That's what I'd like to know, so get on the line and tell me. Lines are open for you right now, toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. It's Behind the Wheel, the Consumer New Car Review. I'm Peter B. Collins, and this week I've been behind the wheel of the 2007 Mazda Miata MX-5, a two-door roadster with a hardtop convertible. It's got a fuel-injected 2-liter four-cylinder all-aluminum engine and a 6-speed manual. The Miata's quick and nimble, takes you from 0 to 60 as fast as you can shift. The Miata's low slung hugs the road with great cornering. With four-wheel independent suspension, the rear-drive Miata passed our grueling hill climb test with ease, unlike other rear-drive coupes I've tested. I give Mazda high marks for the engineering on the retractable hardtop roof. You push the button, and in 12 seconds, it opens the trunk, retracts the roof. I think it'll require less maintenance than more complex systems used by Mercedes and Chrysler. One downside, when the top is up, it's pretty noisy inside the cockpit. By the numbers, the Mazda Miata MX-5, rated 24 mpg in the city, 30 on the highway, stickers in California for about $28,000. I'm Peter B.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance. Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
And let's take a look at the latest, starting off with a problem in Gilroy, westbound 152 at Lover's Lane. It's a disabled big rig blocking the right lane at this point. Also want to take a look at a problem in Hollister Shore Road at Lover's Lane, too. We have a solo vehicle that went off the road. We hit a tree there. Now, emergency crews are actually blocking all of the lanes at this point. So traffic in that area and that particular roadway completely snarled. I want to mention that we do have a... problem in Monterey. We're going to tell you that you can expect delays through Sunday around the Mazda Raceway at Laguna Seca for the Monterey Historic Automobile Races. Also, southern Monterey, an accident on the right shoulder. Highway 1, this is just south of, Nephi. Three-car crash, CHP on the scene. This report brought to you by your genuine Toyota service departments.
Peter B. Collins Show continues. Coming up after the top of the hour, Brad Friedman. In our regularly weekly session about election integrity. And it's time to say bye-bye, Diebold. He'll explain. Continue now with Jeremiah Bauman. He is with Environment Oregon, and we're talking about Measure 49, which will be on the ballot in a special election this November statewide in Oregon. Is that one of those mail-in campaigns, Jeremiah?
Yeah, Oregon's elections are all vote by mail now.
Mm-hmm. And how is it shaping up at this point? Is your governor, Kulongoski, in support of this remedial effort, Measure 49?
Yes, Governor Kulongoski is a huge champion of Measure 49, as are two other former governors, Republican Governor Vic Atiyah and Democratic Governor Barbara Roberts, all three of them working together to promote Measure 49.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. And how is it polling at this point? Do you have any numbers?
Yeah, I haven't seen any recent numbers, but last we checked, it was polling very strongly, you know, easily more than half. As you mentioned, we know that 70% of Oregonians want Measure 37 repealed or fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of people out there that are hungry for exactly this kind of measure.
And have the corporate interests sallied in and ponied up? Are they getting ready to, you know, put on a barrage of advertising to try to kill it?
You know, we won't know for sure what exactly they're up to until the end of the month when the campaign finance reports are due, but we fully expect that the, you know, especially the bigger out-of-state timber companies coming in, because they're looking at tens of millions of dollars in profits off of this, so spending a few hundred thousand or a few million to stop good land use protections is not a big deal for them.
Yeah. We saw a very disappointing effort last year in California. Stephen Bing from Los Angeles spent $30 or $40 million of his own money to put a measure on the ballot to put a wellhead tax on oil drilled in California. And it turns out 41% of the gas we consume comes from oil that's actually originating here in California. And the oil companies dumped $105 million, and they killed it. It died by like a 60-40 margin. And I just couldn't believe it at a time that our gas prices were going up. And, you know, the attitudes, the antagonism toward oil companies was at perhaps a recent peak. They succeeded in propagandizing and defeat it handily.
Well, yeah, that's unfortunately in the era of TV-driven politics, whoever can spend the most money on advertising very often wins. We ran a ballot measure about 10 years ago to expand our bottle bill to put a 5-cent recoverable deposit not just on soda and beer, but add that to water bottles and juice bottles. That measure started out with 80% public support after the big beverage companies and food manufacturers came in and outspent us 10 to 1. It also got about 40% of the vote and failed.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Now, fortunately, there's a silver lining in that story, which is our legislature did just finally expand our bottle bill, so we're going to get an easier, more convenient way to recycle water bottles soon.
Well, I'm drinking out of a water bottle that has a nickel CRV on it, so I feel really, really good about that. What else can you tell us, Jeremiah, about the situation there and what Measure 49 might do?
Well, I think what's going to happen this fall is, you know, we're going to have a real debate in this state about what the future of Oregon's landscape is, and do we want to continue in a state that has really unequaled access to forests and amazing fertile farms and wine country and orchards throughout our state, and access to places like the Coast Range and the Cascades, or do we want to just start building subdivisions and strip malls like some other places have done willy-nilly across the countryside, destroying our landscape and taking up our groundwater? That's what this question is really about, and so we're going to spend the next couple of months out there going door-to-door, calling folks on the phone, raising money to be able to put some ads on TV, make sure people know what this is about, and urge people to get out and vote yes on Measure 49.
Well, as you're describing it, I'm thinking of a TV commercial, and there's so many spots in California that you could use to depict that kind of ugly sprawl. Orange County is full of them. I'm thinking of Mission Viejo, which was once a beautiful landscape, and it's now covered with these ugly condos and townhouses that are all cookie cutter and strip malls one after another. Sacramento is just amazing in that way, where you know there's a Wendy's and a Burger King about every mile and a half on the main roads, and that's the kind of thing you're trying to prevent from occurring in some of the most pristine areas of Oregon.
That's right, and you know, that's an example I actually use often in explaining to people what this is really about. I mean, take a counterexample in Oregon. Portland and Salem, our state capital, in two major cities, they're about 45 miles apart. Most states, and California prime among them, I assume, you couldn't drive up for, you know, there wouldn't be two major cities 45 miles apart that wouldn't by now be, that space between would be totally filled up with cookie cutter subdivisions and strip malls and sprawl everywhere you look. Well, in Oregon, about, I don't know, I'd say 75 or 80% of that drive, you're going past this amazing farmland. There's an iris farm that is famous. It blooms every spring, and the whole, for miles, the whole landscape turns into these amazing purple and blue and red colors of the irises blooming. There are Christmas tree farms. There, it's, you know, rolling landscape, and you can see the volcanic peaks and the hills in the background. And it's just, you know, an amazing place. We've managed to keep it that way as much as we have.
Well, send me a postcard the next time you're driving through. Jeremiah Bauman from Environment Oregon, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
And the website is environmentoregon.org. Keep us posted on Measure 49, will you?
Will do.
All right, Jeremiah, thank you. I'm Peter B. Cox.
We were looking for an inclusive community, so we joined a Unitarian Universalist church where we can really live our values.
Did you know the American Red Cross, the League of Women Voters, the ACLU, and the SPCA were all founded by Unitarians or Universalists?
Imagine a denomination that walks its talk. When Martin Luther King Jr. appealed to clergy to join protesters in Selma, Alabama, more than one-third of the Unitarian Universalist parish ministers answered his call.
And Unitarian Universalists are still fighting for justice today. We're speaking up everywhere for marriage equality, for reproductive rights, for the environment, and for our civil liberties.
A denomination with progressive values makes a difference in today's world. Unitarian Universalists. Come visit our church on the Monterey Peninsula at 490 Aguajito Road at the top of Carmel Hill. Visit our website, uucmp.org, or call 624-7404.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. NFL star Michael Vick is said to have struck a plea bargain. We get that from reporter Pete Combs in Atlanta.
Atlanta Falcons team owner Arthur Blank says Michael Vick, his star quarterback, once considered Blank's protege, will plead guilty in federal court to dogfighting charges. He'll make that announcement, according to Blank, sometime tonight.
Vick came under tremendous pressure to cut a deal when his last two co-defendants entered guilty pleas today and implicated Vick in gambling on dogfights, and prosecutors have threatened to up the ante by increasing the charges against Vick. At the Crandall Canyon Mine in Utah.
Without question, we have suffered a setback. And we have incurred an incredible loss. But this team remains focused on the task at hand, and that's the rescue of the miners that have been trapped since August 6th.
Rob Moore, vice president of Murray Energy, says the underground rescue effort is suspended indefinitely after the collapse last night that killed three men. Their best hope now is a fourth hole being drilled from above. It still has about 900 feet to go. Louisiana Governor Kathleen Blanco is wasting no time. With Hurricane Dean projected to be in the Gulf of Mexico by the middle of next week, she's declared a state of emergency, and she's asking President Bush for federal help. Dean is blamed for at least four deaths as it swept across the islands of the Eastern Caribbean today. By Sunday, it's expected to hit Jamaica. Tourism official Basil Smith tells us people are getting ready.
People are making preparations for the encounter with the hurricane, buying things at the supermarket, filling up at the gas station.
He says Jamaica's resorts are battening down and stocking up on supplies like bottled water. Dean may have a say as to when the space shuttle returns home. Managers may order the shuttle to come home a day early or remain at the International Space Station longer if the storm veers toward Houston. Endeavor is scheduled to land on Wednesday. There's been a deadly military accident in southwest Arizona. Sergeant Ryan O'Hare is a Marine spokesman.
Three Marines and one sailor died, and one Marine was injured when an HH-1N search and rescue helicopter from headquarters and headquarters squadron Marine Corps Air Station Yuma crashed at approximately 20 miles north of Yuma near the Colorado River.
The chopper was on a routine training mission. A Navy radar plane went down in the Atlantic off the coast of North Carolina. Searchers found debris from the twin-engine turboprop, but no sign of the three men on board. They've been declared dead. A robust ending to a nerve-jangling week on Wall Street. The Federal Reserve cut the rate it charges banks by half a percentage point, and that helped propel the Dow to a surge of about 230 points. In Los Angeles, funeral service for Merv Griffin, the entertainer and entrepreneur who died Sunday of prostate cancer. He was 82. Among the mourners, Nancy Reagan and Arnold Schwarzenegger. This is CBS News.
And now for the bonus round. Mary had a little lamb. What did Jerry have?
A silly salamander.
Correct. Snowmen are...
snow boys all grown up.
Correct. How fast can you get movies with Netflix?
As little as 30 seconds on your PC.
Correct! Netflix. Now there's two ways to get movies. DVDs in the mail fast and instantly on your PC in as little as 30 seconds. Netflix. It's that easy. Five movies for $5 a month.
Restrictions apply. See terms of use for start time and 5x5 details.
Sears Book Chapter 9, Tires and Dads. It all began when Jill got her license. Her father looked at the family car's ball tires and panicked. He went straight to Sears Auto Center and bought four Goodyear tires at the lowest prices guaranteed. So when Jill safely rolls in at $9.59, he's glad he chose the best. This life chapter and the lowest prices on Goodyear tires can be found in the Sears Book. For a limited time, get a $20 or $40 Visa cash card with purchase of four select Goodyear tires. Sears, where it begins.
Rebate offer ends 8/25/07. Exclusions apply. See store for details on offer and the Sears Price Match Plus policy.
At the same time the Michael Vick story is unfolding, a dogfighting case in North Carolina is literally threatening the lives of shelter dogs. CBS News correspondent Jim Krasula has the story.
Having to care for 15 pit bulls seized in an alleged dogfighting case has led to a serious space crunch at the Guilford County Animal Shelter. Director Marcia Williams faces a sober reality.
And if we have those cages that we can't rotate, then we won't have anywhere to put the incoming animals, so the adoptable animals would have to be euthanized.
They've already had to put down two dogs with medical conditions because there were no available cages. Jim Krasula, CBS News, Greensboro, North Carolina.
Again today, the bell tolled at a Catholic church in Tilburg, the Netherlands, summoning people to morning mass. The priest rang the bell in defiance of city officials who imposed a fine of $6,700 a day. A message on the church's website says, "People who are bothered by the bell should know that we pray for them." I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Will you love me when I'm six?
Of course I will love you when you're six.
Will you love me when I'm 10?
I will love you when you're 10.
They'll always be your little one, which is why we've introduced the all-new 2008 Ford Taurus, rated the safest full-size car in America.
When I'm 15?
And while you can't engineer a mother's love, you can engineer safety. And according to NHTSA government crash tests, Taurus earned perfect 5-star crash test safety ratings for front and side impacts. Plus, with optional electronic stability control, Taurus is an IIHS top safety pick.
Will you love me when I'm as old as you?
Even when you're as old as me.
The all-new 28-mile-per-gallon Ford Taurus. Visit your Ford dealer or go to FordVehicles.com.
Based on both NHTSA 5-star crash test ratings and with optional ESC, IIHS top safety pick. Star ratings are part of the U.S. Department of Transportation's SaferCar.gov program. www.safercar.gov. EPA estimated 18 City 28 Highway Front Wheel Drive.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
Six minutes after the hour, Brad Friedman joins us this hour.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Brad Friedman is the proprietor of BradBlog.com and our go-to guy on election integrity issues in this country. And I owe him a deep debt of gratitude because he filled in for me and went all the way to Houston, Texas to endure humidity and the threat of floods to originate 10 days of great broadcasts here on the program. Excellent rave reviews for Brad.
Well, thank you, sir. Very kind. I believe I owe you a debt of gratitude for allowing me the honor. It was an honor, and it was a lot of fun, and I hope I didn't ruin your otherwise good reputation too terribly much.
Nothing that I've detected so far.
Good. I realize that might be hard to do. Nonetheless, I hope I haven't done so.
And how was Houston?
Houston was hot, yeah. But actually it was a great town. I was delighted to be there. And I enjoy that, much more than Dallas. On the other hand, when we went up there, we were able to stop by and visit the folks at Diebold.
Oh.
I think you may have still been gone, but we took some pictures of my late-night visit to the Diebold headquarters in Allen, Texas. And so you know me, up to much mischief. We had a great time, and indeed Houston is a great town, and I hope they get some sunshine down there because it's been nothing but rain, and now I think they got a hurricane headed their way.
Right. Yeah, it's been messy this whole summer. Now, what was your visit to Diebold like, and what was security like there?
Security was...
And did they get pictures of you, too?
they probably did. They've got cameras all around the outside of the building, although nobody bothered to come out and meet us. What we did find, and we've got some photos there, it was the day after Deborah Bowen's big pronouncement decertifying the Diebold voting machines in California and her new recertification stuff. And it was interesting because their headquarters down there in Allen, Texas, is in an industrial park with some other companies and so forth. But we stopped by 10:30 at night on a Saturday, the day after Bowen's pronouncement. None of the other buildings had any cars by them at all. Diebold had about 25 cars there. Have a feeling they might have been in crisis mode that night.
Mm.
And so they were working late night down in Diebold. And one of the interesting photos that we took, as you'll see, if you go over to BradBlog.com, you can probably search for, I don't know, Diebold, Allen, Texas or something.
All right.
There are a stack of touchscreen voting machines in the warehouse, that nobody is anywhere in that warehouse, but there's a big stack of touchscreen voting machines right by the loading dock, ready to be shipped out to any town USA. And I couldn't help think, when I saw those, of all of the media, the comments that Diebold and the other voting machine companies had been making to the media that, oh, no one has the kind of access to these voting machines that Deborah Bowen gave to the, that the folks at the University of California had in Deborah Bowen's study. And it occurred to me, well, that's a lie, because in fact, anyone who works at Diebold, for instance, could have gone and done anything they wanted to any of those touchscreen machines just before they were shipped out to some unsuspecting county somewhere in America. And they could have inserted anything they want, any kind of virus they want, as seen in Bowen's remarkable study, and flipped any election in America without detection. So when you hear these guys, and they're all over the media, and thankfully, probably for you, you got to miss a lot of it, in the media, it was nothing but elections officials and voting machine companies talking about this unrealistic study that Deborah Bowen did and how these folks had more access, had access that no voter ever gets. They, received unfettered access, yada, yada, yada. Well, guess who gets unfettered access to those machines? The very same people claiming that no one ever gets unfettered access. The election insiders, like the officials and the voting machine company employees. And the photos from my visit to Diebold will give you that idea. And, of course, I got distracted there because I was thinking, in fact, Diebold Election Systems, Inc. no longer exist.
Now, let's get to that in a moment, because I pulled up the photos here, and I'm looking at these palette of these electronic voting machines in their cute little black boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And I see this picture of you at the entrance with the Diebold logo on the door. Number one, how did you get in to take the picture of these touchscreen machines in their natural element? And how did you resist the desire to take one home for a sleepover?
For a sleepover, huh?
Yeah, back to your motel.
Well, you know, I am no thief. Not to mention, I've already got one. So.
You sleep with one all the time.
I do, in fact. Well, you remember the Princeton University virus hack
right?
Last summer, right around this time. That was, in fact, a touchscreen machine that was given to me by a Diebold insider who, oh, by the way, has unfettered access to those machines, unfettered enough that he's able to give me one or two, perhaps, to do anything I like with. And that's how Princeton University got their touchscreen machine last year and did their virus test.
All right, but this photo of the pallet with a dozen almost of these machines, how did you get in there to take that picture?
Should I tell you, or should I leave some things a mystery?
Well, you just tell me about the actionability of your acknowledgement. What kind of legal...
Everything we did was perfectly legal.
Uh-huh.
We'll leave it at that.
Okay. Well, you got a very good close-up here. That's an excellent camera you used.
There you go.
And I just imagine, you know, you give a couple of 40s to the guy at the door, and unfettered access might be yours.
Well, it could be. This is Diebold, after all. Now, I should add that I will follow it up. There was an article a few days later that we ran, because, in fact, there was a comment. I believe it was on the article you're looking at there. Comment, the last comment that was left on that one, I believe, from the Diebold, the director of sales and marketing for Diebold in New England. It's a company called LFH Associates. Now, I can't repeat exactly what he had to say on air. We'll just say his note starts out, "Brad, you are really full of it."
Mm-hmm.
And he goes on to call me a deluded, paranoid, conspiracy theorist, everything else, challenges me to a debate anywhere, anytime, which I accepted. And he has, of course, failed to take me up on that accepted challenge. But he says that he was there that night. And claims that I was lying about my visit there or some other such nonsense. I'll leave it to you to find out. But I'll tell you what, these guys are in full damage control mode at this point.
Well, Brad,
not just Diebold.
Let me suggest this, because I have an alternate email address for people who don't agree with me, and that's fullofit@peterbcollins.com. And you're welcome to borrow that moniker and just set up a full of it or full of... @bradblog.com.
That's a fine idea. Maybe I would have quite a few takers. I always love to hear from the election officials and the got to meet a few last night, by the way, out here in St. Louis, which is where I am, as well as the voting machine employees, the company employees who are hawking these wares and, frankly, pulling one over on America.
Now, with this as background, I want to give you the platform here. We got 2 minutes to our next break here. You broke the story, and I saw it yesterday, that Diebold Election Systems Incorporated is leaving the building. And it's fascinating. I just realized this, that the letters Diebold Election Systems Incorporated are the same as your beautiful girlfriend's name.
Yes, it is. And that's one of the reasons I don't refer to them that way. They actually call themselves DESI, or they used to, DESI.
Right.
And indeed, that is my girlfriend. And I never refer to them that way because I have a very difficult time writing about how terrible DESI is.
So there's a big
shift. I'm glad they changed their name.
And what is prompting this? I took a look at the stock price. They've been having trouble in the market.
They have indeed. For the past week, the price had been absolutely plummeting, given all of the, we'll call it bad news, that's come out about their voting systems and that they are completely and entirely hackable and just crap, frankly. So their stock began to plunge, and for quite a while, you know, they've been trying to do something about it. In fact, when the new CEO took over in February of 06 last year, after they finally pushed out Wally O'Dell, their former CEO, who had famously promised in a fundraising letter to Republicans to deliver the electoral vote in Ohio to George W. Bush.
Right, and wasn't Wally named ambassador to Crawford for that?
I think he probably already was. He had been down to the Crawford Ranch. He had raised more than $100,000 for Bush Cheney 04. So he was more than welcome in Crawford, but he was no longer welcome at Diebold. They threw him out because, you know, that election business is only about 5% of their business. 95% of it is ATMs and security systems and so forth. This is a 100-year-old company that used to have a great name. I mean, it was a blue-chip stock, paid yep. dividends every year. They made their name actually in the 1800s during the Great Fire in Chicago, when the only thing left standing were the Diebold safes, mm-hmm. where, you know, some people had kept their papers. So this had been a great American company, and Wally O'Dell, former CEO, managed to run them into the ground. They finally, over this, you know, this election business that they all hate at the company. So the new guy took over, Tom Swidarski, who had actually been ahead, the president of the election division. He took over the whole company, and the first thing he started to do was find a buyer to unload this hog onto somebody and get it out of the Diebold corporate parent.
All right, let's stop there for a minute. We'll take our break and return with the saga of Diebold, a name change, and hey, Brad, why don't you and I rub a couple of credit cards together and buy the damn thing and shut it down? Let's work on that, all right?
I think we could afford it.
We'll take a break and return with Brad Friedman. You got a question or comment? I want to hear it. Call me toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. More in a minute on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Tired of commuting an hour or more every day so you can make money for somebody else? Would you like to build a successful home-based business? Let Tanya Simmons show you how. Attend the CyberWise Opportunity Rally on Saturday, August 25th at 1:30 p.m. The CyberWise Opportunity Rally will be held at the Valley Center Bowl in Salinas. Call John Gaines at 831-229-2546 to reserve your place at the CyberWise Opportunity Rally. Call John Gaines now at 229-2546. That number again is 229-2546.
Hi, I'm J.R. Medina, owner of PG Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue in Pacific Grove. My family and I are proud to serve the finest selection of beer, wine, liquor, and non-alcoholic beverages in the Monterey area. Our store is evolving beyond adult and soft drinks. We serve freshly brewed Acme coffee, the finest breakfast burritos, and now Nathan's hot dogs. We're open daily. Come by and check out the big, big selection and low, low prices at PG Liquors. That's PG Liquors at 229 Grand in Pacific Grove.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Hello, everybody. Let's take a look at the latest as you folks make your way home tonight. Starting off with a problem in, let's cruise right over to Monterey. You can expect delays, of course, today through Sunday around the Mazda Raceway at Laguna Seca for the big Monterey Historic Automobile Races. So certainly be advised about that. And also going to mention the fact that we did have a problem. Let's see here. Santa Cruz Mountains, southbound 17 for the summit. It is a gravel truck stalled and is blocking one of the lanes down. CHP not indicating which lane is blocked at this point. I want to mention Hollister Shore Road at Lover's Lane, an injury crash. A vehicle went off the roadway and then slammed into a tree. We have emergency crews still blocking all the lanes there, and it looks like pretty serious injuries are being reported there, so they'll be there for some time at this point. Other than that, we're just going to let you know the support brought to you by JCPenney's. Today and tomorrow, it's JCPenney's Back to School Hottest Sale.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Impeachment with honor. Transitional marijuana. Get your cell phone calls fast. They be watching your ass. Impeachment with honor. What say our forefathers? Finger around. This White House would crash on down. A disgraceful Bush administration. Cheney seems to want world domination. Yeah, the president is a fake. Halliburton's on the tape. Folks are wondering who's running our nation.
Yeah, we're expanding our impeachment archives in the Peter B. Collins Tax Deductible Music Archives. This is a new tune from Joe Grease and the Dump W Band called Impeachment with Honor. And here at the end of the week, breaking news, in an unprecedented order, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, yeah, that's the FISA court, ordered the Bush administration to respond to a request it has received from the ACLU for orders and legal papers discussing the scope of the government's authority to engage in the secret wiretapping of Americans. It's sometimes euphemized as warrantless wiretapping, but I tell it like it is. It's illegal. Now, it has been papered over by the bill passed by the Congress at the beginning of August, but the court is not taking a look at that more recent development and is saying that while the government doesn't have to release information that it has collected, it has to respond to the legal challenges about whether it complies with the Fourth Amendment, etc. So it's a very interesting development. We'll be watching it carefully, and I wanted to make sure you're up to speed on that. We continue with Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com. And, Brad, it's been quite a week with this big change at Diebold, Karl Rove's departure. And for those of us who care about election protection, there is at least a hint here that maybe we're moving forward from the darkest ages of American elections.
Oh, yeah, I think we are. I think the Titanic is clearly beginning to turn back. How long it will take that Titanic to turn back is still up for debate right now. But, I mean, what happened with Deborah Bowen and the top-to-bottom review in California, you cannot overstate the importance of that study. It has had ramifications around the country. The Kentucky Attorney General has asked Diebold and Diebold and Sequoia, Diebold and Hart Intercivic out there to do the same security mitigation procedures and changes to their system that Bowen has required out in California. The folks up in Alaska are demanding the same thing of Diebold. Everywhere I go, and all the folks that I talk to, I'm out here in Missouri now, they all know about what happened with Deborah Bowen. They're all interested. And it's going to have a huge effect. At the same time, and by the way, it of course has led Diebold finally, as we were talking before the commercial there, to give up the ghost of Diebold Election Systems Inc. It has hurt their company enough, the corporate Diebold enough, and they were unable to find a buyer for the company after trying for the better part of the last year, over more than a year, to sell that dog, and no one wanted to buy it, given all the liabilities that clearly this company has. So instead of selling it, they sort of did what Karl Rove did, which is they're stepping aside. In this case, Diebold is now changing their name. Diebold Election Systems, Inc. is no more. They are now Premier Election Solutions. What they hope to solve with their crappy machines, I'm still not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But that's who they are. And then the reason I compare it to Karl Rove, I think, is because anyone who thinks Karl Rove is actually, you know, resigning and giving up politics is dreaming.
Yeah, he just kind of changed his corporate name.
Exactly, and that's exactly what these guys are doing. They're still in business for the moment. They're using a different name. They're trying to hide from who they were, given the awful reputation that they deservedly gained. But I suspect we may see them declare bankruptcy at some point here in the not-too-distant future, because they've got so many liabilities against them. They were being formally investigated by the SEC. There's a class-action security fraud lawsuit against them. And if any of the elections officials out there come to their senses, they will immediately file suit against these guys for fraud, because no one knows better than the election officials the lies that they have been told by this company, who has told them time and again their machines are secure and accurate. And what do you know? It turns out they're not. Diebold was lying, and the folks like me who said otherwise were absolutely right.
And Brad, when we come back from this next break, I'd like to ask you if Diebold actually can wriggle out of the election business, because they have some pretty long-term contracts with election registrars and secretaries of state that might force them to stay in the business against their better judgment. So I'll ask you about that when we return. And if you have a question or comment for Brad Friedman, he's with us for the rest of the hour, and we'd love to hear from you. Toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. That number again, 888-573-8372. Brian Urban is taking your calls. Katrina Rill is our producer. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Beyond Wheat Artisan Bakery, right here in Monterey, brings you sugar-free and gluten-free muffins and cakes that are all natural, with organic ingredients and loaded with super grain nutrition. Find Beyond Wheat at Cornucopia Natural Foods Carmel, Carmel Valley Market, and Staff of Life and New Leaf Markets in Santa Cruz. Be sure to try Beyond Wheat for a truly special treat, created to keep you happy and totally guilt-free. You'll be so glad you did.
Terry McCarter of Clarion Mortgage is a lifelong resident of Monterey County and a truly dedicated, caring real estate and mortgage professional. With many years of experience, Terry always goes the extra mile for her clients. During your initial consultation, Terry gets to know your preferences and needs, and then helps you choose the loan program that most precisely meets them. Terry takes the time to explain all details of the various options open to you, including any potential risks, and guides you through the mortgage process. If you're too swamped at your desk to stop by during the work hours, make a weekend appointment with Terry or see her after hours. Terry McCarter is your real estate and mortgage professional. Her offices are conveniently located in Salinas at 1271 North Davis Road, just across from Applebee's. Call Terry at 578-0773, 831-578-0773.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Welcome to your solar future.
Saturdays at noon on KRXA 540 AM. Your solar future is about the practical, the passion, and the politics of going solar. Listen to Your Solar Future, Saturdays at high noon. Go to YourSolarFuture.com. See the solar videos sent in by folks like you. Save thousands of dollars. Make money as well. You'll see when you go to YourSolarFuture.com.
How would you like to stop your taxes from paying for war? You can support the War Tax Option Act, which adds a checkbox to your tax form that stops your taxes from funding war. This frees up your tax money to pay for other vital programs that you care about. For more information, call 831-521-6042 or visit wartaxoption.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
You know, I,
The show on KRXA 540.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Brad Friedman's with us from bradblog.com. We're talking about protecting future elections in this country.
Calling Elvis, is anybody home? Calling Elvis, we're here on loan.
We know Elvis has left the building. Karl Rove has left the White House. And Diebold is trying to get out of the electronic voting machine business. Brad broke that story yesterday. And, Brad, before we get back into the details here, I have a personal question to ask.
Yes, sir.
While I was away, my email got all backed up. And I was bounced off of the Brad Blog alert list.
Oh,
and I'm here at your site right now. I wanted to sign back up for it, and I can't find the little window. So
it's a private list, the media list.
Although,
we'll extend this invitation to Peter B. Collins listeners. If you would like to be on the Brad Blog alert list, send me a note, brad@bradblog.com. With capital letters in the subject line, say, put me on the list, and I will, in fact, add you to the list. And I will do the same for you, Peter.
Wow. Maybe. Maybe, he added. Well, I'm sorry I got dropped from the list. I couldn't manage it all from a dial-up connection in Italy, and I did try.
Yeah, and if the mailbox fills up and bounces a few times, it automatically drops you. So shoot me an email offline with your preferred address, and I'll get you signed right back up.
Great. So back into the mix here. We have Diebold making a very dramatic change this week, changing the name of the company, and because of stock problems and just the fact that it's a drag on the overall interests of the company, you said 5% of their business is these tortured machines, they're probably trying to get out. And there's also a great item today from John Gideon at Voters Unite up at Brad Blog, correcting an item that he posted yesterday, which only had a minor error. He stated that Sequoia has been trying to sell its voting systems division for a year. And one of the flacks flashed back right away and said, you're wrong. It's only been 8 months.
That's right. That's Michelle Schaefer. She's everywhere. She is Sequoia's main liar, as far as I can tell, because she's out there lying everywhere she can. Now, she did, in fact, John Gideon was wrong. It was not a year since they've been trying to sell Sequoia. It's only been 8 months.
Yeah.
So we were happy to make that change right away, and to note, of course, that they still have not found a buyer, and I don't suspect they will. They'll probably have to, I don't know, change their name or something and then declare bankruptcy. In any case, in the bargain, however, she pointed us to the original press release back from December 22, 2006, when they initially announced that they were looking for a buyer. And what do you know, we found one error after another in that press release. She was making claims that Sequoia voting systems are tested, must be tested before use at both the federal and state level, which is absolutely utter nonsense, and a whole bunch of other stuff, which she says she will change. Of course, that's 6 or 7 months later, and she's only changing it, in theory, if she does, once we pointed it out to her, despite the fact that she knows she was wrong and she was lying. We, on the other hand, are happy to fix errors immediately. We certainly don't do them purposely to try to trick anyone. I might suggest Michelle Schaefer, who has a background, by the way, in crisis management, as she brags on her bio.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she ought to get it right the first time because they ought to know better. And right now, they are in full crisis mode, perhaps even more so than Diebold, as based on this stunning, and I mean stunning, report earlier this week on HDNet from Dan Rather Reports.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Rather did this unbelievable expose on the trouble with touchscreen voting. And the first part of it I thought was amazing enough when they showed that ES&S touchscreen voting machines, in fact, are made in a sweatshop down in the Philippines, which they have not disclosed. They did not disclose to the EAC, the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission, and they were slapped on the wrist for that the day after the report came out. The testing of those touchscreen machines, by the way, consists of the quality control is shaking the machine to see if there's any screws loose. I'm not kidding you. This is what the employees from this plant who work for $2.50 a day with no air conditioning down in the Manila heat,
mm-hmm.
This is what they reported on camera, several different employees who work down at this factory.
So help me out here. It comes off the assembly line, and somebody picks it up, shakes it, nothing comes loose, and then they apply one of those stickers, inspected by number 44?
That's exactly right. Yeah. And, you know, and the report talks about someone from ES&S was sent down there to do damage control with this factory, found that the screens pillowed out so that when you touch them, they would go in the wrong, you know, they would register a vote in the wrong place.
Mm-hmm.
They had a Florida election official with the ES&S touchscreen voting machine showing how every time you touch the screen in one place, it came out in a different place. The quality control guy that was sent down there to fix the problems at the factory says in the report that they had to take truckloads of rats and cats and snakes out of the basement of this factory when he was trying to clean up the place. But that wasn't the worst part of the report.
Well, just one second. The rats and the snakes, are those actually former election officials like Tony Anchundo?
Exactly. Or current election officials or voting machine spokeswomen like Michelle Schaefer, perhaps.
Sorry, I distracted you. Go ahead, Brad.
In any case, that was not the worst part of the report. The second half, and we have it up. We have the whole report on Brad Blog, but for some reason the Google video went away, so we fortunately saved it, and we've got our own copy up there now, separated into sections. So you can look at the last part of the report was stunning. Seven Sequoia Election Company employees on camera by name saying that in the 2000 election, all right, I hate to reopen 2000, but when you hear this story, they say that they worked at the company that made the punch card ballots. And that's what Sequoia did back then, the paper ballots.
Right.
And they were proud of their work. And one of the whistleblowers was the quality control person from Sequoia. And back in 2000, prior to the election, they were given faulty paper. The punch card stock is of a certain weight, is a certain quality. They would get paper that was flimsy. They sent it back. They said, no, we're not going to use this. We're not going to sign for it. They sent it back multiple times. And it was shipped back to them again and again and again. And finally, someone, none of those seven people, but someone at Sequoia signed off to take delivery on that paper, despite the fact they said, we don't want it. Now, to make matters worse, this paper was set to go to Florida. And to make matters still worse, they said, they were given specific orders to change the alignment of the chads. You remember the hanging chads,
sure.
Right?
Uh-huh.
They were told to change the alignment of the chads of the for the shipment of paper punch card ballots that was going to Palm Beach County, Florida.
My God.
And they said, no, we're not going to do that. And again, someone else signed off on it, someone who they don't know, made them do it. And in fact, in the report, Dan Rather actually gets a bunch of those Palm Beach ballots that were sent down there. And, excuse me, they have a punch machine that they test these things with. And they were able to test those Palm Beach ballots against regular ballots that, you know, quality approved ballots from Sequoia. And in fact, all the Chads hung during that test.
Wow.
Who the hell gave the order to use bad paper and to misalign the Chads in Palm Beach County, Florida, in 2000?
Now, do you think this was some sort of a cost-saving measure where they were getting cheaper paper and thought they could get away with it? Because I recall vividly Ken Blackwell was in Ohio, the Secretary of State there, who was really, I think, the leader of many of the fraudulent activities that occurred there.
Mm-hmm.
One of the barriers that he tried to create was, I think, that provisional ballots had to be on a certain weight of paper.
It was actually registrations. Voter registrations were rejected if they were not on 8-pound cardstock or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So these guys understood paper. That's
right,
for
that,
sure.
That, and much of it is specified in the election laws, and the vendors have to meet those requirements, right?
Well, I'm not sure if it's specified in the election laws for the ballots or not. I mean, it's a company. They've got a product. They've been doing business for years down there in Florida. These guys know how to make punch card ballots that will work, and they all talked about how proud they were of their work and how they had the best, what do they call them, fault-free ballots. And they said when they saw the news reports coming out of Palm Beach, Florida in 2000 that the Chads were hanging, they knew exactly where that problem began, and it was in their factory, and whoever it was, you know, you could say it was cost-saving, except why would you pick Florida? And why would you specifically pick Palm Beach to realign? That was the only place they realigned the Chads. They told them the humidity in Palm Beach was such that the ballots would expand once they got down there, so they had to change the alignment of the Chads. Now, mind you, they didn't change the alignment of the Chads on the punch cards that they sent to Texas or to Mississippi or these other areas where they've got humidity issues.
Mm-hmm.
Only in Palm Beach County. Now, at the same time, we know that Sequoia had already begun to move their touchscreen voting systems into Riverside County, California, back in 1998. So you could argue that they wanted to, you know, see problems with their punch cards to help encourage, you know, counties to move to the touchscreen voting.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could wonder about their very close connections, apparently, to Jeb Bush, and whether they specifically said, let's screw up these ballots in Palm Beach, where 10,000 ballots, I believe it was, had to be thrown out because they were either undervoted, the punch didn't go all the way through, mm-hmm. or they were overvoted. Chads were just falling out left and right out of the cheap paper.
Yeah.
It also, by the way, I should toss in here, you, of course, know the Clint Curtis story that he was asked back in 2000 by Tom Feeney to create vote rigging software for a touchscreen machine. One of the criticisms of his allegations was that, well, no one was talking about touchscreen voting machines back before the 2000 election. Oh, really? Sequoia was already using them in Riverside County in 1998, and apparently they had their eyes on punch cards in Florida and getting rid of them, and in fact, mission accomplished, because after 2000, as you know, punch cards became discredited. And now they're outlawed for use around the country.
Brad Friedman with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Now, Brad, let me try to tie some of this all together with two key questions. One I teased you with a little earlier, which is, can Diebold or Sequoia actually get out of the election machine business, or do they have long-term contracts that they need to honor? And B, given the disarray and the financial problems that most of these touchscreen manufacturers are having, is there a risk that they will be merged or acquired by a third party and will end up with a concentration of ownership of the category of electronic voting machines?
Well, you know, I think any of that is possible. In fact, if they, you know, declare bankruptcy, depending on how they do it, if they do it, they can either go out of business entirely, and then the corporate parent may or may not be held accountable. But you're right. They have long-term contracts, 3 to 4 year contracts, and Frankly, we've been sending letters. VelvetRevolution.us, my organization, election reform organization, had sent letters to all 50 secretaries of state about a year and a half ago, warning them about this, that these companies are going to go down at some point, and they would probably want to be very careful about casting their fortunes with these companies that may not be around a year or two from now.
I can just see Murdoch buying them up and making part of the Wall Street Journal.
There you go. Or we could buy them, as you suggested before the break, because they're going for a song, apparently. When Smartmatic bought Sequoia a couple of years ago, they bought it for $16 million. This is a company with some $40 million in assets. Mm. So why the hell did they get it on the cheap like that? And now that they want to sell it, why is it that they can't find a buyer, you suppose?
And maybe this is one way we could actually get our hands on the source code through the bankruptcy courts.
That'll do it.
We're going to take a break and return with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. There's room for your call if you'd like to join us. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. You've got the Peter B. Collins Show.
I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
There's more than one side to every issue. Actually, there's usually more than two sides. It's important to get a different perspective on issues and current events, and that's what we'll provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your host. I have guests with a unique angle on current issues. I'm often joined by Phil Ropp and other guest co-hosts who bring their own expertise to our discussions. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective, here on KRXA 540.
All right, folks, let's take a look at the latest, starting off with Hollister Shore Road at Lover's Lane injury crash. They're still being reported, a vehicle off the roadway and apparently into a tree. Emergency crews still blocking the roadway there. Just a reminder that, we do have Rio Del Mar, southbound one at Freedom. There's a wheel, that's right, a wheel in the left lane. Salinas looks like on Highway 183 at Salinas Street, fender bender, right shoulder. No details at this point. CHP on the way to the scene. And a quick reminder, Monterey, expect delays through today through Sunday. The Mazda Raceway, that's the Laguna Seca. It's the Monterey Historic Automobile Races. Always a good time if you're heading out there. The sport brought to you by your Central Coast Chevy dealer. The incredibly versatile 07 Chevy HHR is great for carrying gear or friends, and it goes go up to 450 highway miles between fill-ups.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues. You got a question or a comment and you're listening after the broadcast, drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com. Or if you're in disagreement, full of it. I don't add the SH. Full of it at peterbcollins.com.
Crazy people getting no rest, stop the pain and time.
continue with Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com, and Chris joins us from Salinas. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Not
Hi,
bad.
Brad.
Hey, Chris. How are you?
Okay. I just wanted to, our county here, we came to the Board of Supervisors here, and we complained about the allocation of buying extra printers for the Sequoias.
And it was close to $300,000, right?
Yeah, $365,000.
Yeah.
And they full well knew that the equipment could be decertified, but they went ahead and they paid for the extra printers. So here we have a situation where now the money that was spent basically wasted, because they're only going to be able to use one of those printers in one place at a time. So that money could have been used to change systems.
Is that Monterey County?
Yes,
Monterey
it is.
County.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if there's any attorneys in Monterey County who want to bring forward a class action suit on behalf of the taxpayers. These guys should have done due diligence. We could have told them. They should have known miles ago that these systems were going to be decertified before.
Well, they did, because we came before the Board of Supervisors, and we actually were able to stop it for a day, and then they went ahead and approved it anyway. And then our new registrar of voters, she just handed out a 10-page document to the Board of Supervisors, whining and complaining to them that Deborah Bowen is scaring the voters away, basically, for voter confidence. She's ruining voter confidence in these systems.
Yeah.
And then, go ahead. I didn't know if you were saying something.
No, go ahead.
She's also saying that now that people will have to use paper ballots, it's going to take much longer to vote on these systems, and that they're going to have to wait in more lines for a longer period of time. I mean, just the disinformation and the misinformation and the misrepresentation in this document that I have, which I'll try to get to you.
It's incredible that they're doing this. John Tudor of Napa County was the worst, and he was able to, trick John Wildermuth of the San Francisco Chronicle to report exactly that same line. He basically claimed that because Bowen is only allowing one DRE touchscreen system per precinct, this meant that everyone in Napa County was going to have to vote on the same voting machine at every precinct, causing lines to go around the block as every voter at the precinct had to use the same one touchscreen voting machine.
Well, they must be using the same form letter. That's exactly what this says also.
Hmm.
And that was a big argument that, my God, it's going to take weeks to count. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, you can count paper ballots. They never talk about the paper ballots.
You can set up touchscreen system for the disabled, and I should mention here that Deborah Bowen's study also found that these touchscreen machines don't even meet the disability requirements of the Help America Vote Act. That said, you can set up one DRE for anyone who is disabled or blind or still wants to use it, and everyone else, they can set up 20, they can set up 30, they can set up 100 ballot stations for people to stand there and fill out their paper ballots and walk over and put it through the op scanner when they're done. She's lying. And that's what they're doing all across California, and it is absolutely shameful.
All I know is Deborah Bowen's got the strength of Atlas. She's got a weight on her back, too.
She does. We need to back her up. We need to send letters to the editor, counter that stuff. You need to expose those documents wherever you can. Call these liars out.
And
we're
meeting
with one of them now who's commenting at Brad Blog on this Sequoia item we posted late today.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to get together here and stand up for Deborah Bowen.
And let me invite listeners to compare notes. And if you've seen commentary like this, where they're using similar talking points and claiming that this is unworkable and it's going to undermine voter confidence, that kind of stuff, drop an email to me and to Brad, and we might be able to see the pattern and figure out where these talking points are originating. Chris, thanks a lot.
I bet you it's coming from Weir.
Yeah.
Steve Weir, the head of the California Elections Association. I'm sure it is. They're working in cahoots with the voting machine companies that they are co-enabling. It's unbelievable.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, Chris, thank you. Now to Valerie.
Media Matters, by the way, also wrote something very good on looking at the misinformation in the wake of Bowen's report.
Okay, I'll check that out too. Valerie in Monterey, thanks for calling.
Hi, Peter B., and hi, Brad.
Hi, Valerie.
I'm glad you're back.
I'm glad to be back.
Anyway, we are anxious to get you fellows to be talking more about hand-counted paper ballots at the precincts, because this is the opportunity for our citizens to contact their Board of Supervisors, to contact the registrars of voters, to start handing around the petition for paper ballots to be hand-counted by the voters themselves, where they can actually have some oversight of the election. And we are doing that here. We have joined voters all around the country who submitted these petitions for hand-counted paper ballots to Deborah Bowen at the public hearing. And if anybody wants to get a petition to sign, contact me at myvotematters@yahoo.com, and we'll make sure we get that petition to you.
Great. Valerie, you make a great point. And by the way, while I was on vacation, I had the letters HCPB tattooed right above my coin slot.
Very good.
I know we're short on time, so I'd like to talk more about that next week if we can. And I don't know how much time you have left, because this actually came up
20 seconds.
What's the, how many?
20 seconds. Go ahead.
Oh, shoot. Well, next week I will tell you about my invitation to the editorial board of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch out here and the writing on the wall at this newspaper founded by Joseph Pulitzer. I'm going to publish it as soon as I get off the air. We'll talk more next week about it.
Beautiful, Brad. Thank you very much. Great to be connected with you again.
Glad to have you back, my friend.
All right. Thank you. Brad Friedman, bradblog.com. I'm Peter B. Collins. Join me again for the Peter B. Collins Show.
Until we meet again.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale from 12-Step Talk Uncensored. Saturdays from 4 to 5 p.m., listen as we deal with life-changing issues that affect all of us. Our fears, passions, anger, addictions, the law of attraction, and how we change ourselves so we can live an extraordinary life. Join me, Sheila Gale, along with Ava, as we share tools for change that work. 12-Step Talk Uncensored, Life 105, Saturdays 4 to 5, brought to you by Sun Street Centers, with education, prevention, and treatment for alcohol and drug addiction.
Did you know that a UFO was sighted over the Monterey Fairgrounds during a blues festival? Or that Pacific Grove police chased a UFO at a Sylmar? Join me, Bob Oliver, Saturday morning at 11 a.m. as I host Monterey UFO Sightings. Then, on August 25th, 26th, meet UFO researchers at the Bay Area UFOExpo.com in San Jose. See you there.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. After killing at least four people in the eastern Caribbean, Hurricane Dean continued to strengthen today.
It was upgraded to a Category 4 hurricane with maximum wind speeds near 135 miles per hour. So that makes it a very dangerous system.
Government forecaster Rebecca Waddington, the center of Dean is passing south of the Virgin Islands. A hurricane warning is up for the southern coast of the Dominican Republic. Jamaica is in the path of the storm, so is Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula, and by early next week, Dean's expected to be in the Gulf of Mexico. Louisiana Governor Kathleen Blanco has already declared a state of emergency, and Galveston Mayor Lyda Thomas is thinking about evacuations.
If we have to leave, the city of Galveston will be the first out. We've been guaranteed that by the state of Texas.
The storm could affect space shuttle Endeavour. CBS News correspondent Peter King reports from the Kennedy Space Center.
NASA has never run a shuttle landing from anywhere but Mission Control, but if Hurricane Dean threatens Texas, that could lead to an evacuation and an activation of a backup control room here. Lead Flight Director Matt Abbott says there are drawbacks.
We have a lot more limited insight into the vehicle systems, or at least less people to monitor that insight.
But NASA does hurricane simulations every year for both shuttle and space station operations, and Abbott says he has no doubt a backup mission control room would be just fine. Peter King, CBS News at the Kennedy Space Center.
Atlanta Falcons owner Arthur Blank says his star quarterback Michael Vick has reached a plea deal with federal prosecutors. There's been no confirmation, but it wouldn't be a surprise. Today, the last of Vic's co-defendants in the dogfighting case pleaded guilty and implicated him.
It is a blood sport. It's barbaric. It's cruel. And it's criminal.
And unfortunately, it takes a celebrity to bring light to it, but hopefully everybody will know what's going on and prosecute them.
Amy Bender was a spectator outside the federal courthouse in Richmond, Virginia. A federal official says the desperate underground effort to reach six trapped miners will be suspended indefinitely after the cave-in yesterday that killed three rescuers inside the Utah mine. The six men haven't been heard from since the original cave-in some 12 days ago. Crews are still drilling above ground in hopes of finding some sign. On Wall Street, the closing bell was a happy ending to a very volatile week. The Federal Reserve gets the credit. CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason talked to floor trader Doreen Mogavero.
I called Ben Bernanke this morning. My knight in shining armor came riding in.
The Dow rallied more than 200 points, breaking a streak of six straight losing sessions. But traders say the bumpy ride